Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
Tonight, a Tampa police officer is off the force, accused of using a racial slur. TPD said the 8-year veteran was heard on his body camera. Melanie Michael is live from police headquarters for us downtown. Mel.
Jen, good evening to you. The police chief says this officer violated policy and he violated the trust of this community. The investigation into Tampa police officer Delvin White began last fall, according to TPD. The officer was on a phone call when his body cam captured him using the N-word when referring to a group of people, calling them ghetto ends. Shortly after, when Officer White was under investigation, TPD says he informed his supervisor that there was another incident when he used the N-word twice, this time as he was making an arrest while wearing his body camera, according to Tampa police.
It's not a word that we condone here to be thrown around, and it's a word that we wish that it really would go away.
The NAACP president from the Hillsborough County chapter says she plans to call the police chief immediately, hoping a dialogue will spark an important discussion, especially since Officer White was most recently assigned to Middleton High School as a school resource officer in Tampa.
Things happen, and I think we ought to make this a teachable moment. It really should be a teachable moment. How do we learn and grow from this? How do we stop other people from using this word?
The Police Benevolent Association released the following statement regarding Officer White. It states in part, despite his misstep, throughout the investigation, private citizens and other individuals associated with his school contacted the chief of police, lending their support and reflecting their admiration for his character and contributions. The PBA will file a formal grievance on Officer White's behalf with the hope and expectation of getting this valued officer back to work.
Aid on Your Side has requested that the body cam footage be released. We should hear more from the police chief coming up, possibly tomorrow. I'm Melanie Michael, live at police headquarters in downtown Tampa. Aid on Your Side.
Black brother of hell.
Many black-owned businesses, especially smaller ones, are struggling during the pandemic. But Atlanta food entrepreneur Keitra Bates is getting creative. NPR has been following Bates as part of our Kitchen Table Conversations, which started 4 years ago. Back then, she was launching a new business. Now she's looking to expand. NPR's Debbie Elliott has her story.
When I first met Keitra Bates in early 2017, she was peering through iron bars into a dilapidated building she was trying to buy in a long-neglected neighborhood.
Here's my dream come true.
Now she's across town, showing me a gleaming new retail space with floor-to-ceiling windows facing a bucolic green space.
Come inside. Right now we're looking at almost 2,000 square feet of raw space. It has original beam work that's still in the
It's twice the size of the Fair Street location where Bates first opened Marty's, short for Market Buddies. It's a shared commercial kitchen where home cooks can prepare their goods and collectively market them. Bates is now planning to open a second Marty's in this new development called Pittsburgh Yards, situated on Atlanta's popular Beltline, railways converted to trails and parks encircling the city. Bates says it's a big step.
Operating on Fair Street is a bit different than operating here, where everybody's looking. You know, like literally, there's no hiding, you know, everything that we say that we are, people can kind of peek in and see, like, are they really making those pies? Yeah, we're really making the pies.
Black-owned small businesses have long faced difficult odds, whether it's access to financial capital or discrimination in contracting. Now the pandemic has hit them the hardest, according to the National Bureau of Economic Research, which found that black businesses closed at more than twice the rate of white-owned businesses in early 2020. Pittsburgh Yards is specifically designed to address obstacles facing Black entrepreneurs. The public-private project converted an old transportation hub into shared working space. The idea is to create an affordable environment for African-American businesses to nurture one another, says Erica Smith with the Annie E. Casey Foundation, which also sponsors NPR. Smith says Atlanta's Beltline is an economic generator, but has also fueled gentrification, pricing out Black-owned businesses.
So part of the strategy is how can we leverage a physical space like Pittsburgh Yards to also satisfy that business displacement issue.
That's Keitra Bates' story. She ran a pizzeria in West Atlanta until revitalization priced her out. And she saw other Black-owned businesses closing as rents went up. That shut off venues where local home cooks could sell their bread, sauces, and pies. She calls them hidden entrepreneurs in danger of being ghosted, along with the traditional flavors of the neighborhood. Here's Bates from 2019.
These people have created a business with their talents, and they have a right to survive. Just because, you know, there's new money coming in doesn't mean that their business should get snuffed out.
Bates, who is 47, has worked to grow a catering business, aggregating the products her vendors make. About a dozen now use Marty's shared kitchen. Bates takes me by on an afternoon when workers are pressing pineapple chunks through a commercial juicing machine. Bottles set up in an assembly line on a stainless steel work table.
I'm going to introduce you to Gigi, who's our vendor who's working right now. She owns a company called Juiced Up.
Gigi is Georgette Reynolds.
Everyone calls me Gigi or the juice lady.
Reynolds started making healthy juices to help her ailing father and autistic son, but soon her gym partners were placing orders. As word of mouth spread, she couldn't keep up with demand. Now Marty's gives her that capacity.
So being able to have the space when I need to fill these orders is a big help.
It also allows for the flexibility she needs to care for her 7-year-old son, who is learning to press juice.
And he loves the juicing and the sound and the cause and the effect of the process.
Have you ever been juiced up?
He's my best salesman. He always asks people, have you been juiced up? Have you been juiced up?
Like Reynolds, Keitra Bates is also a mother. She and her husband, Kevin, a graphic artist and music producer, have 5 kids. She says she wants to show them what's possible. Sitting outside the original Marty's, she reflects on the ups and downs of the last year. During shelter in place, she says, things were tense. Business came to an abrupt halt. Then opportunity surfaced when she teamed with an urban farmer to have her vendors make meals for hungry students and their families using food grown and harvested by the kids. Bates says that was a full circle moment for the business, underscoring how much entrepreneurs need one another.
This place is proof. You can save yourself.
She's been able to tap institutional and corporate resources as well. In addition to opening a second location, she's working to place Marty's fresh food vending machines around town. Bates says with the pandemic and the broader push for racial justice, people are more deliberate about how they spend their money.
People who are changing their habits and their decision-making, that's real change to me.
The past year has also seen Bates and her co-worker, Timothy Dobbins, survive an attempted carjacking and shooting as they were heading out on a catering job. It was traumatic, she says, yet after they filed the police report, they didn't go home.
We still had an order to deliver.
It's something she's been analyzing a lot.
This is what it's like to be Black in America. It's this moment where I felt compelled to finish the job because I'd already started it, and what's going to happen if I go home and cry? I think so many of us think this way. I know for sure my grandmother thought this way, that we don't have the luxury to fall apart.
Bates says she's trying to grant herself a little more grace these days, even as she works to grow her small business. Debbie Elliott, NPR News, Atlanta.
Today's discussion is to raise awareness around some of the issues that women face in the workplace, including imposter syndrome and microaggressions towards women. We are very lucky to have not one, but two organizational psychologists with us today from Gallagher Edge, an organization dedicated to helping executives and other professionals grapple with challenges in the workplace. First, we have Dr. Laura Gallagher, who has worked in the field of professional and personal development since 2005. Laura is an organizational psychologist, speaker, facilitator, and executive coach. She is the founder and CEO of Gallagher Edge, which she started in 2013 and rebranded in 2018. Laura is an expert teacher, trainer, speaker, and consultant, particularly in the concepts of self-awareness, accountability, trust building, and team cohesion. We also have with us today Dr. Stephanie Lopez, an organizational psychologist and executive coach who is an expert in the application of the science of psychology to organizations. Her passion lies in leadership, development, and team cohesion. Stephanie specifically helps leaders become more authentic and self-aware, which enables greater resilience, stamina, and flexibility in the face of demanding and difficult leadership challenges. Laura, Stephanie, thank you so much both for joining me today.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you. So great to be here.
You are most welcome. It is my pleasure. Let's just jump right in. I think a lot of people are probably aware, but why don't we just go over the concept of imposter syndrome and what relation does that have to women in the workplace? Feel free to take turns.
Yeah, we'll probably both jump in and dive in.
Yeah. Absolutely. So, and I can start with, our definition of imposter syndrome, which is it's a psychological pattern where an individual is doubting their accomplishments and feels this persistent internal fear of being exposed as a fraud.
Hmm.
So that's how we define it, how we look at it. And it's really, really common. So that's one of the first things that I want everyone to know. So as we're talking about this, if it feels like, oh yeah, I've had that, you're not alone. Some of the most famous people that have experienced this include Maya Angelou, Serena Williams, Tom Hanks, like big names, people that, you know, we feel very impressed with when we look at them. At least I feel impressed with them. And they also have experienced some of these fears and doubts about themselves.
Yeah. And it tends to like disproportionately affect high achievers too, find it difficult to accept their accomplishments.
Yeah. And there's this big desire for comparison. So I think a lot of people, you know, like what Dr. Lopez is saying, a lot of people that are very high achievers are constantly moving the bar for themselves. And while comparison can be useful and it has its roots in evolution, you know, we used to compare ourselves to one another as human beings as a means to decide, you know, am I adding enough value to my tribe? Like, is my tribe going to keep me around? You know, because that was really important and it was useful to stay a part of the tribe because it often meant the difference between life and death. And so it's this very like evolutionary thing that we do as humans is this comparison. And we still do it today, even though it doesn't add the same value. And in fact, it can significantly detract from how we show up in the world. And then I think this is probably where you can say more, Stephanie, if you'd like to. But I think that comparison tendency feels even tougher for women than it does for men.
Yeah. Yeah. That chronic self-doubt. And one thing that I love to remind in particular my clients that are women is that comparison is one of the most common natural things that our brain does automatically. So I'm just saying that in a little bit of a different way than Laura does, because I find that people are like, oh, something's wrong with me. Like, why do I keep on comparing and doubting myself? And it's like, are you human? Yes. Okay, great. You're normal. And there's stuff that we can do about that.
Yeah. There's something I think specifically, I mean, first of all, I've definitely felt that all of that like tons of times. So often before these interviews, I'm like, I'm just some guy sitting in my apartment, you know, what do I know? but yet somehow it always works out. So that's my first clue that maybe there's something going on.
Yes.
The other thing is that the workplace really invites these things. It's a hierarchical, I mean, unless you're in some really like cutting edge, you know, startup, they're always hierarchical societies. You know, you're always trying to move up. You don't want to stagnate. You want to get better. And there's a lot of pressure, I think, just sort of built into the system. So then you have people that are your colleagues, maybe achieving when you're not achieving. It can be really hard. I think it can be really hard to navigate those waters, just as a baseline. And then I would like to get a little bit more into what it is, if possible, that makes this environment more difficult for women, if that's the way to say it.
Yeah. I mean, the simplest thing is that it's really the patriarchy. And I think, you know, you were pulling on this, Jim, when you were talking about the system, right? So, you know, to build on Stephanie's point around comparison, the patriarchy has historically pitted women against each other. I mean, when you look at the span of history, it's only very recently that women have been working in any kind of capacity close to what men have. And so, you know, if I was to tell you, for example, that there is a Fortune 500 company and the board is made up entirely of women, that would be like, what? Whoa. Like, that would be like this crazy thing. But if I was to tell you that there's a Fortune 500 company that has a board filled with men, you'd be like, uh-huh. So, right. And so the fact that that's like one is mind blowing. Another one is like, yeah, well, that's the way it goes. You know, that's just a symptom of the patriarchy. And I think that there's genuinely a fear for a lot of people just because it's unfamiliar. The idea of having like an all female board was like, would be like, whoa, because we've just not seen that before. And so, and I think it's fair to say that almost everybody would have at least a little bit of an initial like, wow, that is remarkable. And that just shows that we are living in the patriarchy. So like a fish swimming in water,
yes.
Unless we stop to reflect on the water that we're swimming in, we may not even realize it. So we all are, this sounds too strong, maybe we're victims of the patriarchy. We're all living in the patriarchy. And so if we can, you know, do what we can to remove blame from it and just sort of recognize what is, and then, you know, like Stephanie was saying, like work towards solutions around it, I think that's great. So I think the comparison piece has been tougher for women because there's these ideas of like, you know, well, we've got one seat for a woman, we've got to get some female representation. And so we just sort of continue to put women in a position where they feel like they're actually competing internally with one another and not necessarily equally across the board. And so that's one of the biggest contributors that I see.
I love that metaphor too, about like a fish in water, and we have to like pause long enough to notice that. When we keep on just going at typical pace and not like pausing to notice what's going on around us and what the story is that we're making up about it. Like, okay, I don't feel confident. That's associated, of course, with imposter syndrome. That doesn't mean that I'm not competent. It's just self-doubt. And I can rewrite those stories.
Yeah, I think it's really useful. You know, you're talking about these big names, to know that everybody doubts themselves. I mean, just as destructive, and I want to talk about that in a little while, as destructive as it can be to doubt yourself all the time, I feel like it can also, there's not that many people out there that don't experience that. And I feel like they're even more destructive, but that's not necessarily here nor there. It's important to have that moment sometimes to look inside and say, what am I doing? Am I in the right position? That reflection can be really powerful, but you can see how easily it can get in your way. You know, and part of what I want to talk about there is sort of the invisible nature of self-limitation. You know, I think it was with you, Laura, we were talking about microaggressions a few months ago, 6 months, 8 months ago. And what I learned from that lesson was how easy it is for people to give up, you know, when they're meeting certain challenges or they have certain things get in their way. You know, they might try a corrective behavior. Like, let's say a woman is being talked over in a meeting and she might speak up for herself the first time and get shot down and then learn, well, there's no point in doing that again. So I wanted to talk about that specific thing, the idea of self-limitation within imposter syndrome and how invisible it is.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think self-limitations prevent us from achieving our full potential. I absolutely love the quote, you know, whether you think you can or you think you can't, you're right. And I think Henry Ford said that. So the moment that we believe that we can't achieve something or get something that we want, we immediately like put a wall up from us ever achieving that. So it's that mindset of, okay, it didn't work this way, and I can find new tools or new ways to approach something to get what I really want, to, you know, feel true to myself or to be authentic. That's so important to keep in the back of our minds, to have that mindset.
Laura, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah. Well, and because I actually want to pull on that word invisible, because I think that that's important.
Sure.
I feel like there's really two key ways that these self-limitations can be really invisible, because I love the quote that you're saying, Stephanie, and it becomes a moment of self-awareness in and of itself for somebody to realize that it's a belief and a story that they're telling themselves rather than simply a fact. Mm. You know, yes. And I'm going to go back again, actually, to like the fish and water metaphor, right? There are so many ways that we are programmed to just believe that it's a fact that I cannot do something, or that this is not available to me, mm-hmm. you know, lack of representation, for example, where it just doesn't even seem possible because I've never seen mm-hmm. that before. And so there's a moment of self-awareness where the self-limitation can first become visible to that person who's feeling it. And that's when they're able to see, oh shoot, that's just a story in my head, you know? And that's a very cool moment when they can realize that, because like Stephanie's saying, they can change that story. It's, you know, right. That's the only thing that we're ever responding to. So that's one way that I think limitations, self-limitations are invisible. And then the other way is, it comes back to this idea of fearing that we're the only one that mm-hmm. feels this way. Everybody else mm-hmm. is so confident. You know, I'm the only one that doubts myself. Man, why can't I be confident like them? And then you find out that the people that project the most confidence have the same self-talk at times, you know, they're victim to the same, like, oh my God, do I know what I'm doing? And so vulnerability is, I think, another beautiful antidote to mm. that. When we can talk about this and realize yes. that it's a shared experience. I know, and I've had moments where I look up to somebody and I'm like, wow, I would love to be more like that. And then when they can express past failures, they talk about current vulnerabilities, things that they're going through. And I'll feel like, oh my gosh, I had no idea. And then I suddenly feel so connected to them. And I right. feel like I'm not alone anymore. And yes. I realize these self-limitations and these self-doubts that I have actually don't have to stop me from doing awesome things, because look what she did, you know?
Right. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think vulnerability yeah. is one of those things that's really difficult for, I think, people in general, but especially employers, you know, because it's a hierarchical type organization, most organizations, there's this baked in concept, like the person above you, like, has to know what they're doing in order for you to be able to succeed. And if they don't, I mean, that's a really uncomfortable position to be in. So you want to project strength as a leader. And that means, unfortunately, I think the instinct is to say, okay, that means don't be vulnerable. Don't tell people that I have a weakness or a flaw. And it's just unrealistic. I mean, it doesn't really exist. There's no such thing. I just see the tendency for organizations to say, okay, well, let's not talk about our personal lives at work. Let's not connect mm-hmm. to each other in a way where we might talk about our challenges, especially if they're outside of work. Let's just, you know, forget all that stuff, show up to work, you know, sit down, shut up and do your work and go home. I know mm-hmm. it's changing, but not quickly enough.
We're trying to change it.
Yeah. I mean, and inviting the conversation around vulnerability and looking at it as a strength, you know, so I have this really goofy metaphor that I use to highlight how vulnerability is strength. Mm. So imagine, you know, and forgive the violence in this little hypothetical metaphor, but imagine that, and we'll just, you know, it's patriarchy, right? Let's go with two dudes. Two dudes are like, oh, we're going to have a fist fight in the parking lot later, you know? So it's like, oh, this is a show of strength. And, you know, later comes around and one of them shows up and then the other one shows up wearing sort of like a full suit of armor, like clanking, you know, like as he approaches the fist fight. Are you going to look at that one that's all armored up and be like, oh, he's so strong? Are you going to look at him like, okay, he's clearly not strong. He's so afraid to be vulnerable that he has just armored up. And so the same thing happens for us psychologically and emotionally. When we tell ourselves that vulnerability is weak, then that means that we're going to hide our vulnerability, which actually is weakness. And so it can feel very counterintuitive, but we often invite leaders to reflect on moments that have been really meaningful for them in their careers. And it's usually about a leader that was open and vulnerable with them, and they can see that and they start to change their story and lean into it more.
what we're talking about here, I feel like we have two sides we really have to look at. We have to look at how employers can position themselves to be vulnerable, to understand this automatic hierarchy that's built into their organization and sort of the downsides, and understand that many of their employees might be feeling this way. But at the same time, we also need to talk about those professionals that want to move up. You know, a lot of HR people are women. It's like 70% of our audience, you know, and they're all professionals. They're all in, almost all of them are in a position where they've made it to a certain level in the organization, but they're not at the top, you know? And one of the things that's always struck me with most of these interviews that I do is how strong they all are, because you really have to be, if you're going to be in HR, you can't be weak, because you will be torn to shreds either by your employer or by your employees. You know, so I guess the question that I'm really trying to ask here is, how do you balance that need particularly as an HR professional, to be a source of strength for both your leaders and your employees, but also sort of network or use that vulnerability or open up a little bit to make things function better?
I don't know if this directly answers your question or not, but I have people ask me, like, well, how do I get more confident with being vulnerable, or how do I just increase my confidence in general? And you have to take one step first and try it on, you know, little by little. Like, it's not like a light is going to switch and all of a sudden, like, oh, I'm incredible at this. It's a practice. And as we do it, we get better at it and more comfortable. And tuning into when I show up by admitting that I did something wrong, or asking the question that nobody else is going to ask, or whatever else, what am I, like, assuming about myself? Like, if I'm telling myself that, like we were earlier, we were talking about negative stories. If I'm telling myself, oh, well, I'm going to look like a fool, that's not going to help. And you have a choice in terms of what story you tell yourself. You know, if you tell yourself, oh, I have to be strong, I can't make a mistake, I can't do this, I can't do that, you're not going to make it any easier on yourself.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And I'll share another idea, which was really profound for me personally, which is, when in doubt, focus out. And so I had this moment where I was just doubting myself constantly. I had started my business, and so I was regularly consulting with the C-suite teams and giving them guidance about how they can lead more effectively and how to build stronger teams. And I remember talking with a colleague about, I just don't feel like I know enough. And she looked at me and she goes, "Don't you have a PhD?" I was like, "Yeah." And it was yes, right? But it hadn't even, like, I noticed in that moment that I was going to constantly feel like I wanted to learn more about what I was doing, and that me wanting to know more was actually this sign of perfectionism and this fear that maybe while I'm offering guidance, or I'm, you know, because I worked in HR internally at NASA and Disney, so I know what it feels like to work in HR roles, I was constantly afraid that, you know, I might throw something out and they would ask me a question and I maybe wouldn't know the answer to it. And I would let that stop me from saying anything at all. And I realized that is perfectionism, and that is totally, you know, imposter syndrome happening. And when I shifted what I was thinking about, instead of it being about, am I going to look like I really know what I'm doing? I started to think about, hey, you know what? If I can share something and it's a useful nugget and they can take it and they ask me a question, I don't know the answer, okay, but I put something out there and they can bat it around for a while and they can build on it. And that was huge for me in growing my confidence to speak up and say things. And it was also great because I stopped focusing on the potential inadequacy, and I was focusing instead on, I do think this can be helpful for them, even if I don't know all of the things. So when in doubt, focus out is one of the mantras that I often will use for myself.
Well, that's great advice. Let's talk about how employers and HR in particular can help create a culture and environment where their employees can be comfortable having such an awakening, you know, where they won't be squashed right back down the second they poke their heads out.
Do you have anything in, like, when you're thinking about poke their heads out, like what are you?
Yeah. Let's say we have an aspiring young woman who's trying to make a splash in her meetings. And she has ideas and she shares them. People don't listen or they shut her down. And so now she's doubting herself, not because the ideas were bad, but because the environment wasn't created to support those ideas. That's incumbent on the employer. That's their loss as much as it is hers. They failed to create an environment where she can succeed. So HR tends to be at the front of making those kinds of changes, of helping at least assist in the creation of those kinds of changes. How do they get started? Because a lot of organizations have that problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I have two thoughts on this, two immediate thoughts. One of them is around creating a psychologically safe environment. So the way that we respond, that the way that leaders respond to people when they are vulnerable, when they speak up, is absolutely critical. And I think it's useful to help the workforce build skills as individuals to be more open. So for instance, using this example that you use where she spoke up and she felt like she wasn't heard, a concept that Laura and I like to use is called going meta. So it's like zooming out and pushing through the fear and saying, hey, in the meeting, not after the meeting, in the meeting, hey, I noticed when I spoke up, everybody got really quiet, or whatever the observation is. That is so incredibly powerful because no one does that. No one does that. So I have done that. I used to work at NASA as well, and I was working most recently with all of the HR executives across the agency. And I would do that regularly, just make observations about what was happening in the virtual room, you know, COVID times. And it blew their mind. Like, I'm not exaggerating, because nobody does that. So it's on the organization too, to create the environment. And as individuals, we can totally do more than we are already.
Context of white supremacy. Gusty Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Friday, March 12, 2021. So I have been told. This is our weekly forum, Neutralizing Workplace Racism, Not for Spectators. If we have folks, first and foremost, if we have any non-white listeners, you have figured out some details. You don't have though. You don't have what they call imposter syndrome. You speak in meetings, everyone gets quiet. The janitor stops sweeping. You know, stenographer comes to a halt. Not one finger on the keyboard. You know, everyone listens. You know, halt. Make sure we get this idea. Might be something that can make us, you know, new profits for the next quarter. That happens in your meetings. People listen to you. They don't ignore you. You get all of the time that you need. If you need, you know, sick time, vacation time, we got spring coming up and you got events planned for your family or got to work with your offspring's educational program. No problem. Take a week off. Take 2 weeks off. If you want to flex, you want to work from home, no problem. You figured it out. You don't want to take the vaccine, no problem. You want to take the vaccine, no problem. You figured out some things to keep yourself safe while we're in the midst of the whole Rona situation. All of that is phenomenal. Please share. Not for Spectators. The number is 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. If, as usual, or I'll say the other way, if you have any problems, difficulties, where you would appreciate getting some counter-racist logic to try to help you process maybe help solve some of those problems without creating new problems, or at least make some constructive headway getting closer to a constructive resolution. Feel free to share. The number again, 720-716-7300, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Let's see, we heard several segments at the beginning. The first segment, they were talking about a black officer down in Florida. You worked at a as a resource officer, as they call it, when they have an enforcement official in the school. And apparently they found some sort of records where his body camera was on. Interestingly, it seems like so many times they'll have the body camera and they'll go out and shoot a black person or something. Be like, oh, man, the body camera was off. Man, the feed somehow turned off right when they went to fire the 80 rounds. The camera did not turn off this time, where victim of racism is apparently recorded using some derogatory language and N-word. In fact, to have a black male lose a job, and a major component of it is because he said on his body camera during an arrest, ghetto niggers. And that's cause for arrest and termination. The number of white people who get to say that and much more, where we'll have to investigate and we'll think about, and I don't know if he really meant to say nigra and all the rest of it. All I can say, if you are a non-white person, that report had more resonance for me because we had just last week talked about, I think it was our caller in Florida, we said it was a non-white person on the job, and she was saying the other one. She was saying cracker in the workplace. I think he said his mom went and said, you know, they mean white people. Did you know they can hear you? He said, I don't care. It's crackers done got on my nerves. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. She kept moving right on down the line. Ask my one question. Oh, okay, you're away. Okay, that's all. Yes, ma'am. Right on. Keep it moving. My recommendation would be, use professional language anytime you are on the job. Even if you think you're just talking, if you have some friends, non-white people that you work with, colleagues, you all are just, you know, at the water cooler or in the hallway or in somebody's office, use professional language at all times while you are, I can't even say at work, I'll say on the clock during work hours. Use suitable for work language at all times. And in fact, this even goes to, because we get so many incidents, apparently so many individuals classified as white, they love to show off all of their nigra slang in the workplace. So I'm a huge advocate of not even using any slang in the workplace, because that will just end up, you know, inviting more tackiness. So we are all about, for this week, we're all about the Queen's English, and or at least just being professional. I'm known for business jargon, language appropriate for the tasks that we are doing. I don't sound like we're in a brothel or shooting a rap video, because that's not what we're doing. And I have seen where that sort of thing will happen. Black people, they, you know, you are in a workplace saying cracker, you will get, you know, fired or some sort of punitive result. Same thing, saying nigger in the workplace and that type of thing. I've just seen where that happens very often with black people. That's one of the ways we can try to avoid some of those problems. Just reputation for being professional while we are on the job, even Zooming. Next, they had the report about entrepreneurs, specifically Keitra Bates, black female victim of racism, talked about how, hey, over the last year or so, it's been tough. She looked for an opportunity to help nourish black entrepreneurs out in the Georgia area, Atlanta specifically, and some of the, I think they called, that would be considered like micro businesses, the black female. She was opening a juice operation. We have some cows listeners doing the same, to sell healthy products to black people in the greater Atlanta area. spectacular, like high commendation to Miss Bates. I think that would qualify as black self-respect, counter-racist effort in the area of labor, trying to help other black people work and be able to provide for themselves and grow their businesses. Just same thing that I say on a regular basis. That is not going to solve the problem of white supremacy racism for a variety of reasons. I think she even said a part of her motivation, she said she felt like she was seeing a lot of these smaller business owners, they weren't really getting the help or resources to help them, you know, get through all of this, which we talked about repeatedly. And she said she felt like they were going to be ghosted, interesting metaphor, and that, you know, she wanted the help to see them stay. It reminded me very much, I think Mr. Fuller has said, hey, black businesses, that is like having a lemonade stand on a slave ship. You can be thrown overboard anytime, and even if you're not, you are still making lemonade in shackles. That is about the size of it. Like, entrepreneurship is great. It can give you more flexibility, more options in how you mitigate and deal with racism, white supremacy in a workplace setting. But it is not going to solve the problem. Very clear about that. But again, high commendation to Ms. Bates, black self-respect. The last report that was from the podcast HR Works, where that's all they talk about is issues in the workplace, and it's Women's History Month. Maybe it should be White Women's History Month. I think it's possible that both of those guests could have been white. I looked at their images online and I wasn't sure, but neither of them looks black, like not even Meek and Markle. So they look like it could have just been two individuals, two white women, on the segment that we heard, and talking about the so-called imposter syndrome, which I do hear apply to non-white people. I thought it was fascinating. They got through that whole segment, no mention of racism. We got microaggressions and patriarchy over and over and over and over and over. No inclusion of racism at all. Like, oh yes, we have patriarchy. Racism. And I'm even reminded these conversations where white women with their PhDs who are probably being well compensated to come out and talk about, oh, woe is us white women. These folks will frequently, what would be the correct word? They're deceptive. Call things what they are. They will be deceptive, right? When they come out to get their violins and give you all this drama about, oh, me, it's a man's world. And they don't even say whiteness. It'll start me to get through that whole segment without any indication of racism, white supremacy, like just saying it's a man's world. Really? Like Al Sharpton is responsible for the pay disparity between males and females? Really? When you go to all those executive boardrooms that they're talking about for Fortune 500 companies, it's Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson all over the place. That's who's, you know, in charge. Anyway, the other component that is major, when they get to talking about all this and they get into their raggedy, like what I just said, their raggedy statistics, that, oh man, if you went to any of the boardrooms for the Fortune 500 companies, you know, if it was all males, you know, you wouldn't be surprised at all. Pause right there. If it was all white men, I wouldn't be surprised. If it was all black males or all non-white males, yes, I'd be very surprised. They said, now, if it was all females, that, whoa, that doesn't mean, whoa, if it was all white women, I would not be surprised at all. Exact same thing that we're dealing with now. And I would suspect that that day might be coming. You could easily see a Fortune 500 board, all white women. It's, we are diverse. Maybe they'll do the same tacky thing that they do now, throw in one non-white person, get a female. Say, yes, we have our all female board that is still white dominated. But they'll cherry pick. They'll take the statistics and, like, for pay disparity and things where it's gargantuan in terms of the pay disparity is between what white people, white men, white women, white LGBT, white transgender, anyone classified as white, what they get. and all of us lames who are classified as not white, particularly classified as black. That is the pay disparity. So what these white women will do, they will go and take the pay disparity for black females and non-white females and just lump that all together and say, oh man, us women don't get paid well, when it's really us non-white females and males don't get paid well. Yes, there's a pay disparity between white women and white men, but it's not worthy of all that. Oh, I can't believe it. And we need a whole hour segment and a whole month of March with 31 days, not 28, so we can whine and gripe about white women's history and how bad we've been treated. Yeah, yeah, they're lame. All of that said, the imposter syndrome, I do hear that applied to non-white people. And in my view, the system of white supremacy actively works to make non-white people, black people, feel like imposters in the workplace. Notice you didn't hear any mention of affirmative action in that segment. Those were the poster children for affirmative action, so-called white women. You didn't hear any mention of, oh, how did you get this job? Are you one of our quota hires? We got to get a few skirts in here. Is that how you got this? That's how she got it. Yeah, that's how we picked up old Molly here. No mention of that, but they do that sort of thing with the Negra all the time. Didn't we just hear that last week? They had Chad Saunders on the program. He was talking about his book, different podcast, but he was talking about workplace. And he said that, like, oh man, he goes into the workplace, he'll be the only black person graduated from Morehouse, thinking he's a proud HBCU grad. And they look like, this is our diversity initiative. Yes. Glad to have you on the team. Sure, you're so qualified. I've heard so many wonderful things about Morehouse. That's what he just said last week. Chad Saunders, we just talked about all that. They make you feel like an empire, and it doesn't matter. He could have had, I don't know what his GPA is, but he could have had a perfect GPA, valedictorian, at Morehouse, not Howard, where Mr. Saunders graduated from. But it could be perfect, you know. Perfect GRE scores, perfect SAT, perfect high school GPA the whole way through his entire academic career, and it would still be, what did Antonin Scalia say? He probably went to one of those little nursery schools, you know, not a real lawyer. He didn't go to a real law school to get that 4.0. That is the system of racism, and it has an impact. We've heard from folks, I can say that myself, but we've heard from lots of folks who super credentialed, like smartest, overqualified. I think that's the word that they often attach to black people, overqualified, and still can't get a job. Overqualified, not imposter. I'm double qualified for this job, for this position, this raise, whatever it is, and I still don't get it. That's system of racism, white supremacy, which they didn't, you know, address at all. The question component, that was towards the end. And they said, now you speak up in the meeting and nobody, you know, responds, or they don't say, oh, wow, that's a great idea. Wow, we'll have to get a team together and see about implementation. And wow, put that in the note. We talk about raises next month. I mean, wow, what a contract. We talk about that all the time. That doesn't happen. Crickets. Nobody listens. They don't care. Or they steal your idea. We talked about that a lot, too. You say something and then they wait about 5 minutes and Molly, where Mr. Thompson, white man, says the exact same thing, and he gets, oh my goodness, who? I've never heard of such a thing. That's the best idea ever, and all of that. And then they said in the segment, hey, what you can do is you ask, did you notice I spoke up in the meeting this morning and I responded? What's up with that? What do you think is going on there in terms of why nobody responded or engaged with my idea? To ask, I'm a big advocate of remaining in the question lane, right, Mr. Fuller? So I thought, hey, that might be something that folks can try out. I haven't heard if anyone has used that strategy, but particularly if you get accused of being quiet, right? We hear that one all the time. Get back in the question lane. Like I spoke at, you can even have notes, right? If you think that sort of thing could happen, if you have big group meetings where you do present ideas, right, and that sort of thing, and they just shrug them off or rolling their eyes, acting like they're nodding off, about to fall asleep. Yeah, date, time, I spoke up on such and such day. I didn't really get much engagement. What do you think's going on there? Maybe. Well, we can try. Put that in the tool belt. See how that one works out. I'll drop that there. Folks have thoughts they can share. Let's see. Oh, I thought the... Oh, see, we were brought. It looked like we had some sort of issue with the live broadcast. Happened yesterday as well. Hopefully, it will not be long-lasting. I'll get that corrected promptly, and the folks that are listening via phone line should be no issue, but the folks that listen or are listening online look like something happened with the live feed. We'll try it again. Okay, should be corrected. Just saw that we had that trouble yesterday for some reason where the live feed was being uncooperative for a little bit. Okay, working again. If you're listening live feed, just refresh and it should be working fine. The email is untiljustice@gmail.com. Untiljustice@gmail.com. If you have commentary, you're not able to call in or don't want to call in, concerned about your voice being recognized, untiljustice@gmail.com. If you have written commentary, a question, suggestions, whatever you would like to share, and we'll be sure to get your verbiage online. Incidentally, I'll share quickly. I spoke with a victim briefly this week, chaotic week, and they revisited one of our other familiar themes, racist man, racist woman in the workplace. They are not too confused as it relates to black people being cooperative, courteous. I've heard that so many times, heard it for years, even heard it when there was no workplace racism on the cows, even heard it when there was no cows. Folks saying, man, white people do not like seeing black people being harmonious, not name calling, sharing constructive information in the workplace. Like, that seems to really bother them. I've had white people say something about that and all the red, like, cut all that out. You don't like seeing, you know, all that friendly cavorting between you black people in the workplace. Came up again. And interestingly, this was a non-white person. She has even experienced this multiple times where she was in a totally different job, totally different work setting. And random black females, right? She didn't know them previously or anything. They're talking constructively, not talking about racism, right? Nothing controversial, but just talking, being courteous, constructive. They get along, building rapport, as they say. I thought that's normally encouraged. White people saw this, disperse the whole team, move one person, put them up on the fifth floor, move another person, put them down in the basement, got another person, we'll put them on the seventh floor, like break everybody up. This time around, like I said, totally different company, facility, everything. Black female and her getting along, constructive, same thing, not talking about racism, you know, and not, you know, sneaking like out of the office, and instead of working for an hour, we're just going to kick it out here at the water cooler or something like that. None of that. Just when I see the person, we chat constructive, right on. So she says, this female coworker comes up to her and says, man, be on the lookout. You know, they just came by and accused me and said we were outside our office and talking for 45 minutes. I had to say, no, that's not true at all. You know, I may have spoke to her, what have you, but certainly not 45 minutes. And, you know, she had to tell the person this wasn't accurate and all the rest of it. Like, oh, okay. And it seemed like they believed her, but she immediately went to tell this other victim. And I said, so common to be accused. I mean, an hour of you slacking off your shiftless shenanigans. I seen you two and I'm going to rat you out. That's what I mean about, you know, you being cognizant that we are under surveillance in a workplace setting. So you should even be thinking about that. Like, you have a clock. If you stop, if you're just going to say hi, what's up to someone, you have a rapport with a non-white worker. This can't be like we, you know, spill off into, oh, my goodness, we got to catch up. I haven't seen you in a minute. And what do you think about the vaccine? Did it like have to do that later? I know we have prying eyes and they'll be listening to the conversation. So we'll have to keep it brief. If you have more to say, maybe we can text message or even that. They, you know, sometimes they get suspicious if you're doing too much texting, right? Unless you're a part of the clique. So be very mindful of that, the surveillance component. And apparently, race soldiers, they are keenly aware. See, they like us name calling. What they got, the elevator insults and waterhead this, you watermelon head this, and no count that. They love all that. Coon that, yet love it. Love it. Love it. Getting along. Sharing construct. Like caller in Florida said, he had to fuss. Somebody was coming by and making him the butt of all the jokes because he's trying to pick up on some female that works there. And then they had another person came by. Where is that old melon head Tracy at? You know, I came by to heckle her a little bit on my lunch hour. They love it. They love it. If it's, hey, where is Miss Johnson? You don't even have to say Miss John, but I mean, that's better than Melonhead. Where is Miss Johnson at? I just wanted to check in on her, let her know that she looks great. Well, actually, that's it. We don't do physical comments. Just wanted to check on Miss Johnson. Her report was outstanding this morning. Just wanted to say I hope she's having a great Friday. What? You don't want to call her a coon? You sure? You don't want to throw something at her? Tell her her dress is old and raggedy? Ugh. Disgust. We got to get some gossip going. Let me text the clique members. We got to get something going here. We got to stir something up. The black people are getting along. Heard it too many times for the workplace. Courteous black people is a problem. We'll push forward. Let's see the email again, untiljustice@gmail.com. I'll read. I got behind on emails and didn't get caught up from last week, so try to make progress on that this week as we proceed. Untiljustice@gmail.com. I'll read some of those as we go. The number is 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61. If you would like to participate. Let's see. First few folks dialed in. Hands up if you have commentary to share, suggestions, thoughts, either your own situation or what we have heard thus far. Feel free. Let's see. Get some of the first few people who dialed in.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Hello, everybody. This is a caller from L.A. I was listening to the last segment about the white women, racist suspects, and they're talking about women history. I mean, I hope they would think to include the Gloria Steinems and the Margaret Sangers in there. Women history. But that's the only comment I had at the moment. I'll mute my line.
White women's history, indeed. Much obliged, caller in Los Angeles. Let's see. Other folks who dialed in, if you have commentary to share, line should be open. Proceed.
Hello, can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, this is Helen. Hi, Gus. Hi to all the callers. I just want to, let me see. I wrote everything down so I don't take too long. My anxiety starts when I'm on my way to work. White people, they don't hold on to the poles. They stand and they don't hold on to the poles. So I always feel like they're about to fall into me. Or whatever. And a few times they have stepped on my feet. And one day I got extremely upset. But I didn't show any emotion. And I just said, the guy said he's sorry. And I said, that wouldn't happen if you'd hold on to the pole. Not trying to educate him or anything like that. But just wanted to express that I know what you're doing. When I go into work, white people, sometimes they ignore me. Sometimes they'll go straight into talking. Don't care, you know, how I'm feeling. Not that I expect them to care how I feel or anything, but don't care, like, if something is on my mind or if I even feel like hearing whatever you're talking about. They just go straight into talking about their day or whatever, whatever's on their mind. And hopefully at the end of the program, I started recording them. And hopefully at the end of this program, I will be able to hopefully play the recording of conversation that I had with a white male coworker. He was talking about Meghan Markle, saying that she wears the pants and she's in charge and everything. So hopefully I'll be able to play that. What else did I have? Patrick Ewing. I want to talk about him real quick. Patrick Ewing, he was at Madison Square Garden, and he said, "I thought this was my building," and a victim of racism, white supremacy, just like myself. And at times I catch myself saying my job, my this, my that. And it's a habit that I have to break. And that's all I have for now.
Phone's out. Oh, okay. Sorry about that. Woo. Tech issues in 2021. Resolve. Much obliged, ma'am. I was able to hear your commentary in its entirety. The Patrick Ewing incident, I didn't think, I know exactly for people who didn't, I guess we don't know what she's talking about with Patrick Ewing. Hall of Fame basketball player. He was with the New York Knicks. He was on the Dream Team with Michael Jordan. He got his number retired with the New York Knicks. Like, literally, his jersey is in the ceiling at Madison Square Garden. Now, he's the head basketball coach at Georgetown University in D.C. The late John Thompson. Lots of losses this year. So, I think they were at the Georgetown basketball team, they were at Madison Square Garden for a basketball game, a tournament of some sort. And I guess he was going into the building as the coach is supposed to do. Oh, and by the way, in addition to being a black male, Patrick Ewing is like 7 feet tall, like basketball player. So, I mean, towers over everybody, generally the largest person in the room, unless Shaquille O'Neal is there or something. So he goes into the Garden where he played for like 15 years or something. And they're like, "Oh, excuse me, you know, just think you're going to be walking into what? Where is your identification? Who are you, sir?" And he's like, "My name is on that jersey in the ceiling right there. In addition to how many 7 foot black people are walking through Madison Square Garden?" But yeah, I think the same thing happened to Cynthia McKinney. Even if we just want to stay in a workplace context, I was thinking of Spike Lee, really, but Charles Oakley. We could stay in a workplace context. Cynthia McKinney said this sort of thing happened regularly. She would go into the Capitol building before white people were stomping and rioting and be like, hey, where's your identification? She's like, "Man, I've come through. I'm a 6-time elected member of Congress. What do you mean? Where's your ID? I don't remember you. Can't have you sneaking in here." Tackiness does not get any better than tacky. As for the personal situation that she talked about, our female caller, when she was saying the folks not respecting boundaries, I think that is so important. I'm glad you spoke up and said something, because in fact, that reminds me of Gavin DeBecker, who did work on the O.J. Simpson case. Gavin DeBecker, we read his book, The Gift of Fear. Boundary, just your personal space when you have people. And I think one of our listeners in the U.K., I think she had talked about that, having white people who are violent, like they don't respect your physical space, not necessarily that they come up and punch you or hit you or something of that nature, but they will bump into you or step on you, things of this, like literally step on, not a metaphor, like, "Oh man, sorry about that, just stomped right on your toe there, my bad," those type of things. All of that, nip that in the bud. Like, if you are able to fill out an application, get this job, you can walk in a straight line. You can control your body parts. You can respect other people's space in the workstation. And it's the Rona situation. You're supposed to be distancing and all of that. So call that out. Encourage people to watch their space, because in my view, I've seen too many examples. We've heard too many different reports of that sort of thing happening. Sometimes there's a sexual component to it where they're doing these bumps and trying to rub and that sort of thing. Other times it's just flagrant hostility. We've had both. Where it can be same sex, a white woman coming and doing this to another female or males. Either way, say immediately, please watch your space. We're also in the health pandemic. There's multiple reasons, but please watch your space. Be aware of your body and other people's bodies in the workplace. And even go back to the Patrick Ewing situation, but really kind of applies all the way where she said, and I think it's accurate, Mr. Ewing, he said, I thought this was my house. I think Gussie has said for some years those possessive adjectives in the workplace, as she stated, it is not my house. It is not my desk. It's not my computer. Not even my job. I am allowed to work this job that they can take back immediately. Their job. That, as I said, one, it's accurate, you know, just being truthful about things. I'm always an advocate for being truthful in the way that we articulate things. But also, I think it gives the correct frame of mind. So I'm not surprised when things like that happen. I don't walk in here thinking, regardless of how big my office is, or yeah, that is my jersey with my name on it up in the rafters. But I don't forget, this is a system of racism, white supremacy. So anything might happen. This is not my house. This is not my building, not my office, not my desk, nothing. So I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, the white custodial worker is calling me a nigra, you know, and trying to snitch on me and say I was, you know, stealing his cleaning materials, like anything. System of racism, white supremacy. I'm not surprised about, you know, things that happen and how I'm going to be treated. In fact, I expect to be mistreated. That way it helps me to keep my blood pressure down and I can think more clearly about logical responses. Much obliged, man. Was able to hear you completely. Just had a little snafu and getting my response in. Stay constructive. I'm glad you were able to keep your composure though, because that like I would be frustrated about that. People like bumping me or stepping on me or whatever it is. Like, yeah. Much obliged for sharing, ma'am. Other folks who dialed in with a hand up, if you have comments here to share, proceed.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Thanks for taking my call. Just a little commentary before I, just a comment on the commentary before I go into my workplace racism. I feel some form of way for the black male that didn't know how to keep himself together on camera at work, because the rules don't. We don't share the same rules as the other races when it comes to those video cams and anything in law enforcement. So I hope he'll know next time to keep it professional at all times, especially when you're picking on other victims. Darn, poor thing. So I was listening to the ladies. I got kind of a little groggy listening to the lady just speaking and comparing the men to the women and how just the number difference. And it bothers me because black women get caught up in that, and then we separate ourselves from you. Or I don't mean you, but the black males. We separate ourselves from the black males instead of merging together. And I was reading something, what is it? I think it was Forbes. They're considering giving black women a particular amount of money to help boost us up, but not the black male. So it's like we're always separated. And I understand it's Women's Month, but it's not for us, especially if we're using that to even further separate ourselves from you. So I could only listen to so much of that. It's just, I'll get some counseling later. But workplace racism. So I don't know where the Spanish-speaking supervisor is. She was supposed to come back this week, but she hasn't. The black supervisor that's stepping in, she took over my AM case. Well, she's going to stick around on the case longer. She's not going to be able to pick up the second one that I have with the black male. And for the third case that I have, it's a white woman supervisor. So what I've been doing is kind of following the program that's listed for me to do versus trying to make the children comfortable and the parents comfortable, because it's, if you look at the notes that I take, it kind of reflects that I'm making the children comfortable instead of running the program. So I don't want, I'd rather turn in a 2-week notice than lose my job, I think. So I'm following the protocol, and I needed assistance from the supervisor just to let, just so it's in writing that I didn't have any assistance. I had no, I have very little supervision, and she's the only one that's actually supervising me, except for this new case that I picked up in the evening with the Caucasian supervisor. She's supervised twice since I've picked up the case, which is pretty good, and she stayed for 2 hours. I know she deals with me a particular way because the supervisor that the Spanish speaking supervisor reports to her, the Caucasian lady. So I know my name circulates because of my style. So I try to cover myself as well. So for my AM client, I had one of those webcam overlaps this week, and I think last week I had a in-person overlap with the supervisor, and what she noted is no one's supervising me except for her, and she only has 4 hours and she uses them up overlapping me, and I'm supposed to get a particular amount of supervision with these cases. What she stated last Friday was, my cases are very, very complicated, very hard, and I should have had more supervision, but I hadn't. And I appreciate the fact that she has come in, because it makes it easier for me to plead my case. And she's noting everything. So she's noting everything. She's even noting the fact that I haven't had, one of my cases is a 3-tier supervision, and that's 3 different supervisors for one case. I've only seen one supervisor with this one case, and it's her. So she was just telling me how angry she was when she looked over everything that I hadn't been supervised at all this year with this one case, except for maybe one time, and that might have been in January, the beginning of January. And that was 4 hours, and they're usually, it is as if it's an inconvenience for them to get on Zoom for telehealth to do this. That's the energy that you get. I have to come in on Zoom and watch you, and you get the joy of working from home versus me. I have to go out and wear this mask going in and out of homes that I don't even know. Just that. So, that was noted, and I needed that because my cases are hard. The second child that I have is the one that's black, and he's doing Zoom school, which is awful. So, the mom got angry with me this week. I didn't do anything, but, putting in a lot of effort to not do my job and help him do school. So the people in the Zoom don't mind me doing his school because it helps them. So what I do know about special education is they pay more than regular education. So every time he logs in, they get paid. And when I work with him, even if it's a hand over hand, that's all they need. They just need to, okay, I just need him to do one more so I can mark this and we can go. It's that kind of thing. But none of my work gets done. This is why I have to work on Fridays with him, because I can't get any of my work done Monday through Thursday. So one of the things is for him to request. So he's going to request. He's not very vocal, but he's going to request maybe something that he wants. Instead of mom having a particular order, this is a black mom, instead of mom having a particular order, like maybe he eat before class or after class, he just eats when he wants. So right before class is going to start, oh, need some snack. Oh, he needs snack. Here's a cereal. So there's no nutritional food, which is a bother for me, because you can tell by the way he acts, he doesn't have a balanced diet. So his options are Cinnamon Toast Crunch dry. Any drink that's on the counter is available for him. Any drink. I don't care if it's wine, cooler, whatever is somebody left behind, whatever cup is there, that's his go-to. Sometimes it's a big thirsty 2-ouncer of juice, and he'll just grab that, and it's okay. And Doritos. So this, and he takes it, brings it to the table. So, so and so, let's have him request for cereal. Mom is, oh no, he can't request for cereal, because the day before, I'm trying to get the cereal so he can request for the cereal. So I get two bowls, pour it. If he wants more, he'll just hit the more sign, hit more or say more. He knocked the bowl out of my hand. Mom is 7 feet away. She just comes running out. Now, mind you, she's no assistant to help me. She's just there to make sure that this little boy is comfortable while I'm doing this. And because she has to work from home. So she flies out. What's wrong? He starts crying and all that, because when I did, because he's uh-oh, because he spilled the cereal all over the place. So I got another bowl so I can give him a little and maintain the full amount so we can request more. He knocks, and just carries on. And so mom comes flying out like he fell down a flight of stairs. And what's the problem? And I was like, you know what the problem? The problem is, you're sitting right here. We need to request. We're requesting cereal. You can hear all this because you're right there. We're requesting this. I need to put him some in the small bowl. He wants the large bowl. And I need to have control of the larger bowl, and he gets the small bowl. That's the problem. So then I take it to the table. Now he's upset, so the whole day is ruined. He's not trying to do anything. So she ends up getting up, and I've inconvenienced her now, because now she has to get up and sit with him to help her son do his schoolwork that has nothing to do with me. So the next day, so then she's like, well, you know, tomorrow we're not going to request any more food. I said, well, I didn't want to use food as a reinforcer anyway. I already told you that. But I'm just here for ABA that I can't do. So here it comes the next day. And she, oh, no, well, okay, we're not going to request food. Can we use something else like sand? And so the instructor, Caucasian lady, she's like, yeah, sure. So he's not interested in sand. He's eating, just chilling, eating his food and drinking his whatever he has to drink. And so nothing really got done. So even so, now we transition to the second teacher. And he's just chilling, eating. He's not doing nothing. I may or may not. And you can get this out of here. I'm not matching anything. Boop. Smooth your hand. So this is how it went. So we ended up, I had to do the hand over hand so she can mark it, so they can get paid, so she can go. So then the mom says, so how was class today? How did he do with requesting? And mind you, she's 6-7 feet away, watching already. But I said, well, he should be able to do this. So match this, match fork, match glue, match this, match that. He should be able to do it on point. I said, but he's not interested. So it doesn't benefit him. It just benefits the teachers. This is no benefit to him. Hopefully they'll put together something to where it benefits him. But right now, none of this Zoom school is benefiting him. That's how he did today. So what I did was I just took him. I cleaned up everything because I even cleaned up school while mom's sick because she's so busy working right across. So I clean up everything, sit him down, and then I grabbed him and I just started doing singing just different things in song, ABC songs, just different things in songs, and just trying to calm him down because it's not his fault. And I didn't do work with him yesterday. And then when I just came today, this is the day that there's no school. I just kind of went with his flow and we just kind of went over numbers and different letters. And then dad was like, I took off 3 hours today, you know, so I could spend time with him. We were walking. Yeah, you need to do something instead of throwing all this on me. And then mom is like, we worked on shapes and colors and stuff all night. He just kept saying, good job, good job. Well, great, mom. Great, great. So that's all I'll share for today. And I'll mute my line. And thank you for taking my call.
Much obliged, Bay Area mom. Man. She said she had to get counseling after listening to the white women. I guess number one, that's something that I've been pointing out before. Like, white people do not care about children. That is flagrantly reflected in this job, like the reports that we've got, you know, for some time. Specifically, you getting a non-white supervisor, I think black female, she said. She comes in, so she's, you know, just looking, this is the work, this is the assignment and everything, this is the record, supervision and all that, and like, what is going on here? Why are you not getting supervision, and why do you have such a challenging caseload? That's something, doesn't have to be caseloads specifically, but black people getting really like difficult assignments, like getting lots of them and even getting overloaded with assignments where maybe you're hired and you're supposed to come in and do ABC. Now you are doing ABCDFGMQ and have got no raise in compensation or additional assistance, that sort of thing. Or if we're talking children, and I've seen this like on a personal level, I worked in the school system myself, where if you're someone working with children, right, in that sort of setting, you will get the children who have like the most behavioral problems or are going to be the most challenging in terms of resources, time and energy. They'll just pile up black workers with those types of cases. And then the children where they're higher functioning, they don't have all those problems. Maybe they have any disciplinary problems. They're on track academically where it's not going to be a whole lot of work or at minimum. Right on. Good job. You know, keep it up. Like that's all you're doing. They don't really need a whole lot of assistance. They give them to all the white people. Like I've seen that consist. I've seen it on a personal level. We've heard from it. Like all. And that again goes back to that so-called imposter syndrome is no, it's what it is. They set you up to fail. They give you all these difficult clients to work with, and they're like, oh my God, I'm overwhelmed and stressed and I'm not making any progress. Maybe I can't do this work. Nope. You're not even being put in position to do this work effectively. And they don't care about children. But the lack of supervision. So, I mean, that's so consistent. We talk about being in a position where you can grow in your field, where you can learn more, enhance your skills, build your resume so you're more marketable. None of that's happening. You're not getting any supervision. Nobody's checking in on you to polish up if you're doing great work so that can be noted. Maybe we can, you know, get you a promotion. You can move up through the ranks or anything like that. Nope. No guidance at all. No career nurturing at all. Like that is so tacky and consistent. With black people. And she said she gets a new black supervisor. What does she start doing? Documenting. Look at this. This is disgraceful. She's not even me. What are we doing? Documenting, writing this down. And white woman, she said, Hispanic speaking white woman, it might be, not doing anything. sitting at home in her footies on the Zoom. We've been talking about, seems like we've been talking about that for a whole year. And that is not just impacting the black person caseworker with these children. That has an impact on these children where they're not able to develop and thrive as best they could in this program if she was on her job supervising, as it were. Anywho, the food, I'm glad it was brought up, the food situation. I've seen that before, people who work with children. Food has a huge impact on behavior that just cannot be understated. I did like a double, triple take because she said that this child will just grab whatever beverage is there. So if it's, you know, pineapple juice or Coca-Cola or wine cooler, it's wine cooler. What? What is going on? But it seemed, I mean, that's what she said. Like, wow. Like that is, man, Dr. Welsing said, you play around with sex. The joke is on the offspring. Wow. Like absolutely, terrible. But that is what the system of white supremacy is designed to do and have us where we don't really have proper reverence for the whole process of making a child and nourishing that child and all of that, because everything black people, everything in general gets devalued in the system of white supremacy. So that sort of thing is rampant. Try as best we can to not be that by being real strategic, having great respect, great value for the production of life, especially black children. All of that said, like, man, I would just continue to emphasize, like, this just, it seems like such a stressful work environment for like a billion reasons. Like the clients don't seem too vested most of the time in their offspring and trying to see them improve and what have you, white or non-white. And then obviously, the white supervisors are not vested. They have their own concerns that they're focused on, not about your development in this job or about the children's growth and development. So, yeah, just emphasize again, updated resume and working on an exit strategy. I would not want to hang out with these folks any longer than I had to. Yeah, but like a billion different reasons. Much obliged, Bay Area mom. Sobriety would be best. Let's see. The number again is 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Folks that we missed totally. Do you have commentary? While folks are getting some of their thoughts. Oh, see some of the other. Still might do it because I am behind. I'll get in some of the emails and then check in with some of the other folks who we have missed totally. One email, untiljustice@gmail.com. Today I heard a black, this is from a black female victim of racism. Today I heard a black male say that black people get evaluations while white people get mentorships. Whew. Sometimes I would say, ooh, I had planned to follow up with this email, but that was not the plan at all. I didn't even read this in advance. White people get mentorship, resources, and a helping hand on the job. I looked at my team and noticed the last two white people were deleted from the chat and weren't on the schedule. So I looked around to different teams and noticed they got transferred to projects where they could be left alone, practically data cleanup, which is easy. So they were not included in the so-called employee evaluations that were team-wide. So every team had to complete evaluations, although they were here during the phase they were evaluating. So today, my manager says, She's doing another evaluation based on our documentations and if we select the correct dispositions. This is completely unnecessary, but then I noticed my team is now majority black women with two black males. I'm just pointing the inconsistency out right there because that's the sort of thing that people would highlight if I did and reversed it. And they would say, oh, see, Gus hates black females. So it says black women and two black males. It should be balanced. It would be women and men or males and females. If I came on this broadcast and I was saying black men and black females, oh my goodness. I told you, see, he hates black females. He hates black females. I'm saying, pick one. Either it's black men and black women, black males and black females. I've concluded you don't have black men, women, non-white men, and non-white women in a system of white supremacy. They would be non-white females, non-white males. You have white men and white women. But my recommendation would be to pick one. People do note if you're saying men and female or the reverse, female and men or male and women. People do note that. So it says, now majority black women and two black male team. Now they have extra supervision. I remember her saying a few months ago, they, meaning the health department, would be selecting a few people to work on different projects. And I come to realize that she was selecting and transferring certain people for these projects, which often includes less stressful work. I believe other employees notice, but they don't say anything. The contract ends in May, so what's the point of all these unnecessary evaluations? She's a horrible manager. Maybe it's imposter syndrome. All I can say, I wish I could say that, hey, Gus T is clairvoyant. I had already read all these emails and I already knew what people were going to talk about when they called in, that our Bay Area mom was going to talk about not getting supervision and now getting this black supervisor to come in and recognize, like, dang, they are not helping you at all. They are just throwing you out here in the wilderness and no help for the children. Like, what have they been doing? I wish I had known that, so then I could segue to this where she's saying the same thing, like, dang, these white people are getting a helping hand. What did she say? A helping hand, mentorship, resources. That is not what happens to black people on the job. Even training, you can add that in there as well, where white people will get training, like, oh, you don't know how to do this. We will coach you up. Maybe even get a black person who's been working here for like 15 years and has gotten no promotion at all. We'll get them to coach you up and then you can get a promotion. Standard operating procedure. I suspect some of the folks may have noticed, like what she said, other non-white people, they may have noticed that this is happening, that this white woman manager, that she is cherry picking the white people to take them off of the difficult work. Didn't I just say that? Didn't Bay Area mom, she just said that. She just said they give her all these really difficult cases. Young child that she was talking about who has speech difficulty, not verbalizing, can't even make verbal requests for things. Give you all of these difficult cases with no support. And then the white people, yeah, we'll just get you some data entry jobs. Put your feet up. We'll get you a Starbucks card. You'll be done in 5 minutes, but we will bill for 10 hours. System of racism, white supremacy, and then have the audacity to turn around and call you lazy, us lazy and shiftless, that we don't want to do any work. And number again is 720-716-7300, the code 564-943 pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. I probably wouldn't say anything either. If this is like some sort of temporary assignment, I probably wouldn't be worth the time and energy to make a big to-do, because the job will be done by the time, you know, they could just waste time for a month and a half and then this will all be over. Let's see. Other folks who dialed in with a hand up. If you have commentary to share, proceed.
Can I be heard?
Mo in Dallas. Yes, sir.
Thank you, sir. Greetings, Gus. Greetings to listeners and callers. I also took a double take when I heard the previous victim mention the child having access to a wine cooler. That was very disturbing. And it, in my opinion, I could be misinformed, but it doesn't sound like that she has a cordial, or I guess sometimes it could be not cordial relationship with that child's mother. So in concerns with stuff like access to alcohol, I would recommend, I don't want to tell her what to do, but I would recommend that she make notes of things like that. Because sometimes people that are other victims, it could be less confused, and a child having access to alcohol or something like that could be, you know, it could lead to, you know, criminal charges, like, you know, child endangerment and such. So, like, it's a very dangerous situation, and it's not to, you know, I'm certain she doesn't take it lightly, but, like, I would just, you know, double take a document when you notice things like that, if she's not doing it already. I also noticed in the HR segment, I came on the program late, and I thought I was listening intently for them to mention racism in the segment, and I didn't hear it. I did hear one of the ladies mentioned how, like, she was insecure about speaking up and verbalizing her opinion in meetings, and someone else was like, well, don't you have a PhD? I find that funny because I've noticed, like, especially where I work, there are a lot of people that are educated. Like, they meet me with their credentials, and they're not very... In my opinion, they probably shouldn't be listened to, but they'll validate, you know, their opinion with the fact that they do have a degree of some sort. And I think that works. I think it's like a tactic that is used for manipulation, and is discounted when they want to feel like victims or. You know, just want to practice confusion. Let's see here. The officer losing his job for saying inappropriate things to the children. I'll say it that way. I believe sometimes those body cams can be turned on remotely, and I believe sometimes, like, they don't turn off. Like I feel for the children that had to be subjugated to that. I know if he was working in a school, and if the kids were kind of difficult to deal with, it is stressful. But, like, I believe, you know, these schools are underfunded. And the parents are stressed, the kids are stressed, now he's stressed. Like, it ties into the email and the previous caller, you know. It's meant to stress you out. And we are put in a position to fail, especially with no supervision. You know, and you'd be surprised that when you're not being supervised, you're still being supervised. Somebody is watching. I recommend that, like Gus said earlier in the program, how victims remain, you know, or try to limit themselves to workplace jargon in a workplace setting. I would like to reiterate that I do recommend that victims considering alter the way they text and practice in their personal lives, texting out the full words, especially if you work, from home or, you know, on a computer or something like that, because you don't want to end up crossing, you know, your comfortable rendition of the English language with your work language or the way you speak at work. If you can keep it up for it, if you can remain consistent with it, it wouldn't be very difficult to adjust, in my opinion. What else do I have here? Watch your space. This is very important. I am one that that was pleased with the social distancing mandate. I don't have to, you know, touch people and things of that sort. And it's really strange because people at my work, even with the social distancing, there's still an outrageous amount of hugging at this job by my account. And I don't do any of it. It's just not cool with me. I noticed a coworker of mine, a white male. I have to get the background for this one. There was a black male who quit, or he put in his 2 weeks, and on his final day, he sent out a rather checkered email, to say the least. And my coworker, white male, came in and was just talking about how racist he was. He was a black supervisor. Just how racist this man was. And so I stayed in the question line. I was like, well, what makes him racist? You know? And he was like, well, when he first hired on here, he said he wanted an entire black staff to work under him. And that's racist. And I was like, oh, well, okay, so that makes him a racist. And he was like, yes. And I was like, well, are there any white racists up here? And he kind of just had something else to do. I thought that was very interesting because, I've noticed that this coworker, he uses the word racist a lot, but he only calls black people racist. I find it very interesting. So he actually, this was like Monday. So later in the week, he mentioned a black female being racist. And he described why he felt she was racist. From what he was describing, she was just a lady who was serious about her job. You know, like I didn't, nothing that he gave me described or alluded to her practicing racism. She just wouldn't let people take shortcuts. And I guess she had white subordinates beneath her in some regard, and she was making sure that her job wouldn't be in jeopardy. And I asked him again, question lane, this is the second time you mentioned a racist person. Do you know anyone else who up here that's racist, you know? I asked, do you know any white people up here that are racist? And I didn't get an answer. Also, manners are very important at work. I do use Mr. and Miss or Mrs. It's my own little brand of courtesy. I don't force people to call me Mr. or anything. They can call me by my first name. And I also oblige people when they don't prefer Mr. and Miss and call them by their first name. That's all I have. I need my line. Thank you.
Much obliged. Mo in Dallas. I cannot emphasize enough. Be professional in the workplace. In all compa like that was a nice book in both way through with manners, the sir, ma'am, please, thanks, all that. I'm a big advocate. Obviously I do that on the program and, you know, off the program. But in the workplace, I think getting a reputation for that's the way you speak every day. You're not using nicknames and things for people and have a reputation for being someone who behaves in a serious manner, a courteous manner, a professional manner at all times. So that if someone comes in, Mo was out here and calling me a ghetto coon. And I was like, dude, what? Like, I don't know. I've never heard him use such language. He's sir and ma'am and pardon me. And what he said, what? Do you have a, like, that's the way that, not that, you know, I mean, hey, system of white supremacy, we get falsely accused all the time. But I mean, that's the way that you want it, where someone is coming in and saying that you were cursing at them and all the rest of it. And it's, dude, what? I have never heard that before. Like, every day he is just super professional. And even if you're talking to other non-white people, like, there's no point where you would, you know, lower your guard, as he was saying, like, you don't know if it's a body camera situation, can these be turned on remotely? We've had people who say they work in work situations where they have Alexa and things, different devices that are capable of recording audio, maybe video too, who knows? And I mean, hey, people got phones and all the rest of it. So just be very mindful at all. Like he said, even when it looks like you're not under surveillance, you are under surveillance in one way or another, maybe multiple ways. So act like whatever you're saying at all times is being recorded. And as such, lots of manners and professionalism. Even if you work with other people who are not professional. We've talked to a number of folks who said that they work with white people and non-white people who are, you know, filth, florin, flamin, you know, racist jokes and curse words, all the rest of it. Even if they are doing that, don't allow that to pull you into their, you know, rubbish language. Keep it professional. Even if we've had people that are on construction sites where that sort of thing is common, you know, that's no big deal. This is manly, you know, we talk profane and curse and tell, you know, dirty jokes and all the rest. Even there, be professional. I do not participate in all that, and a reputation, same way, for not, I guess you can drop the sir. They don't generally do that on the construction site, but hey, might even want to keep that up. Reputation for being professional. The wine cooler, I thought that was important too, in terms of documenting, because that is the, coming up on the compensatory call in tomorrow, that type of thing. It's easy for that to be reckless endangerment and grounds to taking a child from an attempted black parent. As I said, that'll be coming up on the compensatory call in tomorrow, how easy it is for something like that. So, yeah, and I don't, and sometimes some of these situations, they say that the educator or the caseworker is a what they call a mandatory reporter. So I don't know, sometimes they might even say that that's the sort of thing that you're supposed to, you know, snitch, supposed to, you know, let people know because that child is in danger, which is true. You know, shouldn't be consuming wine coolers at that age. But yeah, I think documenting, because I mean, you don't know if that's happening on a regular basis and all the rest of it. And I think even Mo was saying maybe even I don't really have a report. Like, it's hard. It's hard. Like, when you don't have a rapport with a person to make a suggestion or to try to say something, to just try to let them know that, oof, this is really dangerous. Your child is already having, like, what you consume has a huge impact on behavior. Like, it would have been enough. Just the Doritos alone would have been enough. Like, whoa, this child is just... You cannot just have a situation where the child can just grab anything to put in their mouth, like Doritos. No. Fruit juice. No. And I mean, now we got the wine coolers, like, whoa, man. But yeah, not having rapport makes it really difficult to say something. But yeah, that's kind of serious enough that it would warrant a word or three. But I mean, it seemed like there would be long conversations about problems in this particular area. So, much obliged, Mo in Dallas. Number again is 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Let's see. Other folks who are with us, if you have a hand up, comment here to share. Line should be open.
Hello, can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, this is Helen again. Just one quick question. And if this question has already been asked, then it's fine to ignore it. I wanted to know, what is the codified answer, the codified way of going about answering the question, have you been vaccinated? My code, I say that I don't qualify. And if someone tries to go in deeper, like, I find that white people at the job, they ask us questions so that they could, like, pry information out of you to get you to talking about the vaccination and, you know, why you would take it or why not. Or whatever. I say, I'm not qualified. I say, oh, well, you know, I called the telephone number and they said I wasn't qualified. And that's what I say as a way to cut the conversation short and so they can't, you know, ask more questions or whatever. So I'm just curious to what everybody else says, if they say anything, or if they've been asked at the job, you know, have you been vaccinated? And if this question's been asked already, then it's fine to ignore it. Thank you.
Much obliged, ma'am.
Can I respond
to that? Mo in Dallas. That question had not been asked, ma'am. Mo in Dallas.
I didn't mean to speak over you guys, but I was actually just asked that question yesterday, and my answer was not codified at all. And it was an older black lady, non-white black female, who asked me the question. And she could, because she was talking about how she had got her second vaccination. She was like, "Are you getting vaccinated?" And I was like, "Well, no, ma'am. I'm pretty healthy. You know, I do my push-ups, got my vitamin C going. You know, I kind of ran down my little health regimen." And after everything that I said, she was like, "Well, I just wanted to get it over with so I don't get bothered. And I recommend you do the same." And she started, like, I don't want to use this term, but kind of like grandmothering me, you know. And so at the end of it all, after she gave her spiel, and I was like, "Well, I understand, ma'am." And then she grabbed my shoulder and said, "Get the vaccination." And I was like, "Okay." Like, in the way that I said, okay, she knew I wasn't going to do it. But it was just like, oh my God, I needed a way to answer this question. So I thank the previous caller for saying that. I do not qualify. I'm going to write that down. Thank you. I mute my line.
But it's all her, like, back up, man. Just because you got your vaccine does not mean you can run around and willy-nilly touch on everybody. Back up. Social distancing. That is a good question. We'll have to see if other folks, if they either have developed a code or if they have even been asked that question in a workplace setting in terms of, have you taken the shot? Are you going to take it? What are your thoughts? I would recommend not getting into discussions about the vaccine in the workplace. Like, the only dialogue would be with human resources or whomever the designated person is. If it's your supervisor, and I suspect a lot of organizations, they might have a point person who is the contact person to ask about COVID-19 protocol. It would just be questions. It would not be this. I mean, for sure is not an issue for speechifying. And let me get up here and tell you my thoughts and what I read about the Pfizer vaccine and comparison to the that is for sure not what you are paid to do. Like, questions. That's it. I don't have anything to say other than questions. Now, if they're just asking, have you taken the vaccine or not? I think for some workplaces, like in terms of safety protocol, they might want accurate information about that, just, you know, for whatever reason. But I wasn't qualified, I think, is great. Question has been answered. Told me I wasn't qualified. Oh, okay. Any further follow-ups, I'll have to see. Get more information. I don't know. Like, those can be very, it should be very short. Any other follow-up? And then you can ask, Have you taken the vaccine? Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. And then we can move back to other workplace topics. But I wouldn't be, and I would be saying the same thing that we said before, social distancing. Like, it shouldn't be a whole lot of cavort, like rubbing on you and hugging. Moen Dalla said that it's all this hugging going on. And like, hey, back up, man. Like, let's forget that. I don't do any handshakes and fist bumps and all the rest of it. Like, let's keep this conversation short so we can move back to our area and get back to work. Other folks, have you been asked about whether or not you've taken the vaccine? Anybody got a codified reply to that question?
Excuse me, sir. 7:15, the vaccine has been turned off. All right.
Hi, I've been asked by a parent if I was going to get the vaccination, and I told the parent that they're not mandating that they're not mandating us to get it right now the way they were before, so I don't know what happened, but I just tell them that, and that's it. So I'll be a little more codified from here on out. I'll come up with something better to say, but I just tell them that it's not mandatory right now for me to get the vaccine.
Good one, right on. Yeah, I definitely would not, I would not want propaganda from a coworker about getting the vaccine, like, unless they're a health official. If they're not a health official, if this is just Bob and we work together at the bank or whatever it is, like, no thank you. Like, had enough of that. Like, yay or nay. Like, man, you shouldn't get it. This is for sure Bill Gates, and it's got the Illuminati in it. And I'm like, yeah. Heard all that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's just get back to work. Like, or that, man, you have got to get that shot, Gus. Like, my goodness, it is the best thing ever. It doesn't hurt. It will be great. You'll be healthy for the next 15 years. And it's got some other health effects too. Skin will be brighter. Hair will have more sheen. It's the best thing ever. Like, yeah.
Gus, he said it didn't hurt.
See, she might be totally true. She might be telling the truth, and maybe it absolutely didn't, and that's great. I do not want to be propagandized by my coworkers. We came here to get a job done, not for you to sell me on getting or not getting this vaccine. Like, thank you, and back up. Keep your hands to yourself. Let's keep it pushing. Any other folks been asked this one in the workplace or got a codified reply? Somebody should come up and ask, have you taken your shot?
Maddie Harris?
Yes, ma'am.
Hello, this is Red in Ohio. I can't remember if I might have been asked by the only white woman I really talked to. I know she said that she actually signed up for her vaccine, and I probably could have had a better response, but I was asking her questions because I'm like, if you are going to, I still think of it as a volunteering yourself, especially this early on. So I was asking her questions if she had asked whomever, the, you know, health official or professional or whatever, the question, and apparently she didn't, but I was asking, does it protect against the second strain or the newer strain, and what about the mutation and stuff like that? So she wasn't really that knowledgeable, but I do appreciate, you know, all the different responses, so that will help me in the future should I be asked. When it comes to, like, not qualifying, I think that's a good response for most states now, but I can't remember which state it was. I don't know if it's maybe in, like, the Pacific Northwest or maybe even the Midwest, but one of the states, they're opening up the vaccines to everyone over, I think, 16 or 18, something like that. So just keeping that in mind, too, just pay attention to what your local state protocol is. Also, I just wanted to share my observations. I know it's been a while since I shared. I am in a new area. I can't remember if I've shared that I've been moved over to a new area because my supervisor, who is a non-white female, I think she might classify herself as Black. I didn't know that, but she has suggested that I move over to a different area to replace a white woman who had retired. And I would say the majority of the team are white women, I would say at least over the age of 45. And the white woman who retired, of course, she was like, you know, older. And they all seem to be somewhat pleasant, but of course I still keep my guard up. I do address them as Miss whatever, Miss Susie, you know, Miss Jacqueline, whatever. I try to make sure I do that consistently. I know sometimes I do forget, but I'll make sure, just like I think it was Mo, try to make sure I do that more consistently. They haven't said that they don't like that or they do like it. They just basically answer. And then with the just following the same theme of being under surveillance, and recently I was made aware or reminded that I was under surveillance. Just like in the past, I do find it easier to connect with Black females, especially those who are kind of like within my same age range. And I was talking to a Black female who was in a different department, but she still works in the same on the same floor as I work. And we would mainly just talk about different processes with the systems that we have to work on. Sometimes she'll share like a little bit of personal information, but something that she would buy or something like that that she was really excited about. We actually first connected but about talking about hair. And most of the time, since she works in a different area, it's like, oh, if she's walking past the area that I typically work in, then it'll be like a quick hi and bye. Sometimes it might be no more than 5-10 minutes, which isn't really that long in the whole scope of everything. But recently she had told me on the inner office messenger that she was apologizing because she didn't want to get me in trouble. And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. And she was saying that, oh, well, somebody said that we were talking for 45 minutes. I've never talked to her for 45 minutes. Especially like not while we were both on the clock. Not even that, like even, you know, just our first conversation, it wasn't even 45 minutes. And that was like in the hallway. So she was saying that someone said that we were talking for 45 minutes and she was apologizing for getting me in trouble. And I was wanting to ask more questions on the messenger, but it's like, if we're already under surveillance, I'm absolutely sure that this messenger program is being monitored too. And I was at a different job, just, you know, sidebar, I was at a different job in the past where it was a non-white person through Messenger was selling pills. And that's the reason why they caught up with him, because he was, and I don't know if like the people who were actually buying them too, but that was, you know, I think he was actually prosecuted. But even with something as not even anywhere serious as that, I know I make sure that if I'm sending out an email or even just talking to someone, try to make sure that it's as professional and choose my words wisely. So I just basically told her, you know, okay, I understand. Well, thank you for telling me. But then when I eventually saw her in the hall and we were alone, I didn't see anyone around, but you never know, microphones and stuff like that, but I doubt it, but you never know. But I did ask her a few more questions, and she was saying it was something to do with someone who was in upper management. And I couldn't quite understand if she was saying that something in the area that I work at, they were saying that there was something that was behind there or somewhere in the area that she works at. if there was something that someone was falling behind. And she said that I feel like they just wanted to have a scapegoat. But that was interesting in and of itself. But I'll mute my line for now.
Blaming black people, non-white people, never goes out of style. Much obliged, Red in Ohio, accusing the Negroes of fraternizing in the workplace. Very common charge. Now, if it had been, they were out in the hallway and fussing and fighting and calling each other bees and hoes and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Coming in and doing a little name calling, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Maybe not that big a deal. Now, we do get in trouble for cursing, absolutely. But I mean, I've seen enough illustrations where if you want to just be about some cattiness in the workplace, black people just getting together, being about cattiness and goofiness and name calling and maybe a little time talking about who won the Super Bowl or some other goofiness.
Yeah,
probably be all right. Courteous, constructive. They could be planning an insurrection. Very important that we just remain because I think a lot of us, they talk about sometimes you have like a camera, like directly, like, you know, it's on you. And then people just, they get accustomed to it. They forget and they let their guard down and, you know, are doing something stupid. Next thing they start scratching in their ear or something like that. Oh, my God, the camera's on. I think for a lot of us, you just kind of forget, like, man, like, white people have so many different ways of having us under surveillance. Like, they don't have to be around. Like you said, you know, they have recording devices and cameras, and then sometimes it's other non-white people, and just, we are under constant surveillance. Like, you really, once you're on the job, you really have to behave in a manner like, hey, there are no secrets. That's why I say, this is not my computer. It's not my office. Getting rid of those possessive adjectives. That way it helps me from getting too comfortable, right? This is not my computer, so they might be looking on it every 5 seconds, you know, as each keystroke. They are picking it up live time, which sites I'm going to and all that. So I'm not just surfing this willy-nilly, you know. They're probably watching or have non-white people watching or whatever it is. I'm not going to just be talking to this person about anything. Apparently, we got to make sure that we don't even talk too long. we end up talking over 60 seconds and they've been fraternizing for an hour, stealing corporate secrets and all the rest of it, intellectual property. We are under surveillance. And that would be another reason for those sirs, ma'am. I think she read in Ohio was saying that sometimes I have bumped into a white person or a non-white person where they kind of, particularly it'll be, if it's like a female, you say, oh, no, ma'am. And they'll be on the age thing. Like, what are you trying to say? I'm some, you know, old biddy or that type of thing. I have heard that a few times, but generally it's not a problem. Like just once or twice where it would be someone we're like, hey, cut all that ma'am and sir out. I'm not some old person. You know, my dad is ma'am, sir. But generally speaking, that is no problem. Like, and even with that, I would much rather have one or two people occasionally say, hey, I'm not some old guy, what are you saying, sir and ma'am, as opposed to the other, you know, let me coon this and making up nicknames every 5 seconds and calling you everything but your name in a work environment. I would much, much rather be the former. The number again is 720-716-7300, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Let's see. Other folks that we have missed totally. If you have a hand up, line should be open. Proceed.
Can I be heard?
Greetings, non-Clemson grad. Maybe Miss C as well.
Yes, she fell asleep. I will say I had a couple of things to report. I've been working from home almost over the last year, and was called back into the office on the 1st of March. As I got closer to the 1st of March and going back to the office, like that last night before work, I felt such an overwhelming feeling of dread and anxiety that I just took the day off at the encouragement of my wife and my mother. It was interesting, too, because it was a whole lot less stressful working from home than working in the office. Even after going to the office, my wife and my mother would call me at work just to check in on me because I just sounded so depressed about having to go back into the office. But maybe other people are having that kind of feeling as well as they work in the office constantly or going back to the office after working from home. Going back to the story about the black officer who said the N-word and got caught on his live video camera, I'm going to juxtapose that to about a half year ago when I was in a grievance panel for work for a corrections officer. The corrections officer works, in a jail, and he said white power. He was merely demoted and is eligible for promotion after 1 year from being demoted. So, it's been more than a half year. So he's well on his way back to where he was. So I just want to juxtapose that. I found that to be very interesting. The long story about the women talking about being, an HR department and stuff like that. As you were playing that, I just dang near tuned out. I just didn't really care to listen to what they were saying because it kind of reminded me of the woman who was like a high executive at Facebook, Sheryl Sandberg, I think is her name, who talks about the idea of leaning in to get to where you're going and stuff like that. At least what I personally feel to be unproductive information about how to actually deal with people in the workplace, let alone how to get ahead and not get fired in the workplace. So at least not useful for non-white people. But I will say this, me personally, in my job, I do participate in my meetings. Sometimes I don't say anything because sometimes I just don't feel like saying anything because I feel like some of the meetings I do are just a waste of time. That's just my personal feeling. But one thing I try to do is that when I do try to say anything in my meetings about the topics that we discuss for our job, I try to reference things that I shared in previous emails. So, for example, one thing I personally do at work is one way that I try to improve myself in my position is that I share articles and stuff, and I try to read articles, journals, reports and stuff because I do planning, and you're trying to see what other places other people are doing from around the country, maybe even the world, and how it might apply to, where I live, what I think might be a good idea and what might be a bad idea. Now, I will say it's very interesting sometimes when I find myself in a lot of my meetings, my coworkers, even my manager and director would even agree with me. But this doesn't necessarily encourage them to try new ideas or try something new. That definitely has not been my experience. But I will say this. I don't get the sense that anyone has stolen any of my ideas, at least not yet. If anything, maybe because of where I live, more people are just simply dedicated to what they're doing right now because, people are used to doing what they used to do even if it doesn't get correct results. And my last particular story, it's not even a complete story, but it's been an interesting story, is one of the things I'm responsible for is overseeing the pass-through of federal funding. And unfortunately for me, one of the people I have to deal with is a former county councilman. What he tries to do is that he's real big into pod cars, right? If you're not familiar with what a pod car is, think autonomous vehicles, of personal rapid transit vehicles. Now, I'm a transit planner by trade, and I know stuff like this is absolutely garbage in its scale, scope, execution, and all the stuff that comes with it. Nevertheless, this former councilman is constantly trying to push this stuff through. And recently, he was able to get the local disability board, which is a quasi-government institution, to side with him on this project as he leads the project. My friend, who I talk to often, who is a consultant who does data analytics, basically called, as far as he was concerned, he doesn't like the guy either. He knows him personally as well, too. It was basically a kickback scheme. But, we don't have no way of proving that right now. We haven't seen any money change hands or anything like that. Nevertheless, this man was all trying to lead the project and how to basically get this money flowing from the federal government. And this, to his hands, through the disability board, which I would kind of say is not just kickback, but also money laundering to a certain degree as well, too. But again, no money has changed hands yet. So one of the things my friend started having me do was to demand more documentation about who's partnering where, what the responsibilities of the partners are, who's you know, matching the federal funds, what are the federal funds being used for, what is it being, you know, what services are being procured. And eventually I started reporting this not just to my manager, but also my director, the county attorney's office, and eventually the Federal Transit Administration, ringing the alarm that I had a problem with what this former council person was doing with all the things he was trying to get me to do. For example, changing the scope of a project without getting federal approval. So basically what I was recommended to do was to get an agreement form signed by the disability board, which is supposed to be the lead recipient for the project, not this council person who is using the disability board as the lead recipient for the federal funds. And at first, we would try to get an agreement form or MOU, which states, you know, the responsibilities of my agency and the responsibilities of the disability board to keep track of all documentation for whoever they pay money for or whoever they pay services for. And then at the advice of my friend, he said that neither document is necessary. He told me instead, just give certifications and assurances. What this means is that my entity, because we are a pass-through agency, and we're mostly in charge of regulations and making sure everything is being done correctly, if we're not on the same level as the recipient who is receiving the federal funds. We merely ensure that they're following federal regulations, as opposed to we're partners for these federal monies. So what that does, especially because I got a little bit of help with writing them as well too, is that it creates a situation where my entity is able to do its job and oversee the federal funding that's passing through our organization, but also it creates a situation where all the responsibilities for reporting, all the ways the money is spent, who is spent on, what services are being procured, is the responsibility of the subrecipient, the disability board, and that they have to take full responsibility for how they use that money, as opposed to my entity being a partner with the disability board. What this did for me is that it took all the pressure away from me and put it all on the disability board. So I didn't feel any, not that I don't have any responsibility, but now I'm not trying so hard to figure out what these people are trying to do. And I put it all on the disability board to make sure they monitor what the formal councilman is doing. And then anytime they give me any receipts for federal reimbursement, I basically get to question what they do and how they did it. And so long as I do that, even we find out later that this is a kickback scheme or anything, I then have proof that I did my bare legal minimum to prevent such a thing from happening. And it puts all the responsibility on the recipient and not me. And then I'm getting potentially sued or arrested by the federal government. And, you know, in that situation, I really appreciate my friend, you know, an older black man who's in his mid-50s for, you know, helping me to get through this process. And of course, through this whole entire process, I have backed up all my emails and all my communications and even a couple of phone conversations I recorded. So if anything ever goes wrong, I know who to point to. So, for example, when I was ringing the alarm, telling my manager, my director, the county administrator, and the attorney's office in the Federal Transit Administration, I have a couple of those conversations recorded on my phone. So if anyone ever tries to come after me for, you know, any kind of, you know, malfeasance, I know who to blame. And that, with that, I'll end my call.
Dang, non-Clemson grad. Wow. Right on for documentation. Even got some help. Now, see, he got assistance. Might call that a helping hand from an older black male. He said, victim of racism. That is spectacular. Black self-respect, might even say. But I mean, wow. Like, there are lots of white people, white men and white women, who could be doing that, exactly that. Help out. This is what's happening. This is what you can do to protect yourself, but they don't do it. Bravo to that black male victim of racism for lending a helping hand. Help you protect yourself. I mean, my goodness. The Bravo as well might be a different act of black self-respect for self-care. I remember a non-Clemson grad when the whole Rona situation kicked in. In fact, for a little bit, I think they were clearing out the office, and he went in for a little bit just because the office was cleared out and didn't want to have to go through the harassment of them looking over his computer at home and such. But to be able to be away from the office and slights, insults, all of that for all that time, and then to have to go back in personally, like, wow. We heard from a number of folks, Cal's listeners, who were in that situation where they were feeling the same way, like, man, this has been hallelujah times. Like, don't have to be prepared for all this goofiness. Like, we can just do email or Zoom occasionally, and just everything. But bravo for taking a day off just to say, man, I need a little bit more time to kind of get my mind in the correct frame to deal with all of this nonsense. Like, spectacular. And to, man, family members, mom, Miss C, for encouraging, like, take that day off. Like, yeah, get your reserves up so that you can have all the patience you need to endure. The white power remark, I'm not surprised at all. Even a white person could have said white power and some substantially worse things. And I could imagine them keeping their job. They just get a little sensitivity training. And he said he was, I guess, like on probation for a year, what have you. But that's expired. So he's probably, you know, back up the ranks where he was before. Back pay and all, probably. Let's see.
Did he get disconnected?
I think he did. I thought it was just me being disconnected. I guess he must have lost his connection. Good old-fashioned internet.
Okay, well, did you guys hear about Sharon Osbourne or yelling at, what's the lady's name? I forget her name. Sheryl Underwood.
What woman's name?
Sharon Osbourne. She was on television yelling at Sheryl Underwood, asking her to teach her about racism. It was interesting.
Oh, no, I didn't see any such thing. I believe Sheryl Osbourne is the wife of Ozzy Osbourne, the singer?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, I vaguely saw that in my news feed, blew right over it, didn't think too much about it.
Well, it was just a short tidbit. She was basically confused. She doesn't understand how her friend is a racist. She also doesn't understand how defending her friend makes her racist by proxy. I was like, the level of pretending was just ridiculous. Like, it was about this Meghan Markle situation. That newscaster in the UK, I guess he tried to date Meghan Markle at one point, and since she didn't want to date him, he's been like on a yellow journalism campaign just slandering her. And Sharon's really close with this guy. And she was like, well, he just doesn't like her because he doesn't like her. She just happens to be black. I'm like, well, why doesn't he like her? Because this particular caster has a history of being critical to just black people in the media in general. If he was just a rude person, it'd be different.
You know, that's unfortunate. There are black people or non-white people who end up in these kind of situations. And at this point in my life, I just, I don't say anything. I say, that's unfortunate. And I just change the conversation. And at the very least, I try to point back the conversation to the white people who are talking badly about the non-white people. And then also, any white person in any kind of realm that I find trying to pretend like they don't know what you're talking about, especially when you're talking about, white supremacy or anything like that, at that point, I see that's a reason to end the conversation and go do something else. Because if you sit there and allow them to, they will literally just waste your time with lies. You know, they're going to lie? Fine. You can't prove it. You can't make them stop lying. And you can't punish them for lying. Go do something else with your time.
I agree. Are you talking about Piers Morgan? Is that the
Piers Morgan
person?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, I saw something, but just like, the non-Clemson grad, I can't take any more of the information about Meghan Markle and the baby comments. And it's just, I feel like
we deal with way too much already. And it's, I'm almost curious, like, why is that so much more important than the whole pandemic? I don't know.
Well, I brought it up because in the segment, Sharon Osbourne actually almost made this lady cry and then told her she couldn't cry. Like, I was like, wow. It was, I was like, I had to keep watching. And I don't even watch daytime. I don't even watch television. But I found that entire thing. But it was just interesting.
And she was totally checking Cheryl Underwood. She was just, it wasn't a conversation. She was checking her. And she wasn't asking she wasn't asking for clarity. She was using that as an excuse to justify that check. She was just, don't you dare cry. I need to be the one crying. And she was just checking her. And it was awful to see how she was just ripping her apart and then gave this flimsy apology on Instagram or whatever social media outlet the next day. And she was cussing her out, and she was just, answer me, tell me. She was checking her. It wasn't that light. She was checking her. Okay, I'll mute my line. I'm sorry. I just had to add that.
You are correct. And she, for anybody who finds it, Sharon Osbourne actually, she said that she feels like she's being put in an electric chair. Like, she actually... Like, while she was attacking this victim, she explained the kind of attack that she was feeling, like Sharon Osbourne. Like it was just wild. I mute myself. Hopefully Gus is back.
Gus is back. I'm a tad stupefied. I said yesterday, my Wi-Fi was spectacular until it was not. So the Wi-Fi is, like, gone totally. I thought I was being cool, like, oh, I could try a different computer, and no. Now it's not working at all. Like, I'm a little stupefied. I don't know what to say. It has been working great today and for the past few months, but now it is not. And even more wild, when I was speaking before, I could hear you all. When you brought up the Osbourne situation, like I had been talking about non-Clemson grad and that I was going to the suggestion about self-referencing when he was saying in meetings what he'll do is reference an email that he's written to, you know, make sure or to try to promote his brand and ideas that he's sharing for planning and all of that. I thought I was being heard. I could hear you all, and apparently I was not being heard, so. Technology is spectacular in 2021. I will only say I hope it was. It's in the archives, so the archive will be great. But I only added. I thought it was Black self-respect in two separate, equally important but two separate ways in terms of Black self-respect for non-Clemson grad taking a day off, and then Black self-respect. And then it shut my switchboard down too. Like, I'm unbelievable. Like, anyway, Black self-respect for taking the day off, and then Black self-respect for the older black male.
My wife,
older black male who left out. I'm sorry.
I was gonna say one thing. My wife was gonna say if she was still up is because I was working from home most of 2020. I took no days off. And the major reason I chose not to take any days off because I basically feel not very stressed from work until I had to go back.
Excellent planning. I think he said he does planning by trade, so that shows saving up, squirreling away those days off. That is high-level thinking, what I would expect from a valedictorian. Yeah, job well done for the mental health. That is important because there will be days like that where it's just like, man, I do not feel like dealing with all of this today and all the rest of it. So job well done. I didn't say this before, but in terms of this white fella and his kickback scheme, right, he's got this whole transportation pod scheme thing that you said, you know, this is not going to work. This is not feasible at all. This is some sort of whatever scam to rip off some taxpayer dollars or whatever. Like, I feel white people do this sort of thing all the time. Like, scheme, con, get away with it, like, and then find a way to put the blame off on somebody else or what have you. And just total nonsense. Like, you have black people that are struggling just trying to do what they are supposed to do. Like, they're not trying to scheme and get over on anybody and trick them and beat them out of some money. And they are just mistreated and terrorized and all the rest of it. This fellow, like you said, like, man, it looks like this is not feasible at all. Like, in the best realm of possibilities, this is ludicrous. Like, and this is constant where they're just, let me see how I can scheme and get some nepotism, see if I can get my grandson the job. This sort of nonsense, like, document, 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 as the black male shared with you, document yourself and be on the lookout for scheming white people, as so many of them, male and females in the workplace. Other folks who dialed in with a hand up, if you could, people that we missed totally, if you have a hand up, proceed. Folks that are any folks that we missed totally don't have a hand up. I'll check my. Hopefully the Wi-Fi will cooperate. I'll be able to check the switchboard in a moment. Let's see.
May I be heard?
Greetings, caller in Florida.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners, and callers. I wanted to start out with the apparent feud that has been going on between two black female coworkers who have been working with each other constructively for at least about 15 years. I've been on this job almost 10. So I've seen these two working with one another in the civil department for a long time. And apparently since one victim has become a supervisor, she has changed her behavior and has been mistreating the other black female employee in a destructive manner, starting to, I guess, as they say, nitpick certain ways that she does things and saying that certain policies has changed with certain cases and what she does when she goes to court and saying that she's antisocial. I think I mentioned it briefly in the past few weeks. I'm setting that context to say that the mistreated black female shared with me that after 17 years, she decided to go to the criminal courthouse. And the person that I use the code name, the warden, went and conducted a meeting with the people on the civil side of the courthouse. And she made an announcement that this black female was going to be moving. So her supervisor, which is the other black female, the warden asked her, to share in your time working with this black female? And she says, I have no words. I have no comment. So, you know, when that was reported to me by another victim, you know, I was sad to hear that. And I guess the black male that was in the high position, the court director position, I guess, be somewhat compensated and made some kind of comment and said something generous about the person before she left. So it seems like she's beginning to mistreat other Black people in a certain way. I haven't really noticed it because I don't work over there. I just kind of go through there on passing. So, you know, I just try to be and I just wave and speak. But that was my first one. My next is, let's see. Okay, I've been calling in sharing incidents for some years, and this person, I think, is a high level. She's the reason why there's a MAGA clique. The metaphors I use, the gang, she started this. I have reports on this person. Number one is, this is a report that came to me from a victim, Black female, who works in a child support area. It was only her and a Black male seated in the area at the time. This white woman, she comes over there and she speaks and she says, "Wow, these are my two favorite people," to two Black people. So when she told me that, I'm like, what is that supposed to mean? You know? So I jot that one down. That's, she clever in her skill in practicing racism. So it was that one, and she has a tendency to try to, like I said, try to dominate areas where there are Black people that are congregating, I guess, or just, you know, just talking to each other, as you just mentioned, something constructive, not insulting one another, not trying to mistreat one another. I could just predict, because I think you mentioned that, Dr. Wilson mentioned that you can get to the point where you can start predicting when racism will happen. So she was walking through the hall, and I could see her through the window, and it was myself and two other Black females. Now, in this incident, this is focused on clothing, right? So this racist, she walks in, and these two females have on polka dot related clothing. Okay, so one has on Black skirt, a red top, and the other Black female has on a blue dress with yellow polka dots. This person comes in, is racist, comes in and says, "Wow, now I know you all are conspiring. Wow, now I know you all are conspiring. You have on black and red, okay, and you two have on polka dot and some other people on the other side." She didn't say Black, but I automatically knew that's what she meant. So some other people on the other side have on black too, black and red, but she kept accentuating the color black. All right. So I text another victim. I said, "Oh, wow, I have a good one." So I, about an hour later, I walked over there and another person had on the color black. I even had on the color black that day, but she had on black and red like the other victim. So I'm pointing this out to say that they, anything racist, are analyzing Black people over the most minuscule things. So that was the second one from this suspect of racist or white supremacist. I have two more. I ignored both of these because I've already gotten in a confrontation with these two. Meaning where I had to address them practicing racism through making reports. So this person, this was the person that hung up the decorations. I was about to clock out to leave. and I was pretty much letting a non-white person know, you know, have a good day or whatever. And I was telling her to move something on the counter that she was missing, some office item. So I was standing in between her and another clique member. She was sitting behind me in her office, well, the office where she's been assigned. And she said, oh, just, you know, just knock her out blank, saying my name. I said, you know, I'm thinking that's real violent. So they over there just laughing and playing and, you know, playing music and stuff. So I just walk on out or whatever. That was one because I'm like, man, that's making it look like I beat on women or something like that. Like, what do you mean knock her out or whatever? So that was another one. And I actually have two more. The black female was approached by a white male, a white man, really. And they have this tendency to just walk in with a bunch of black people around, like I'm the center of attention. So he asked the black person now, and I just observed this. He wasn't talking to me. So he says to the black female, hey, did you just get off of the elevator about 5 minutes ago, per se? And she's like, no, like, but when I did come in, I did catch the elevator. So he says, man, I knew when I was getting off of the elevator, it smelled like blank, use her name. And I just thought that was something that you wore or something like that. And that sounded like a predator to me, in my opinion. But he says, well, you know, but don't get upset. It wasn't a bad smell or nothing like that. So they all start laughing. So this was the same guy that said that you got the vid 19 came up with the racist slang and everything. And my last one is I was walking through the traffic area. Right. So they see the whole group. They've been trying to, even the bailiffs, the sheriffs. It's like they have this round table meeting, I think. So they've all been trying to show that false courtesy or whatever. And I walked through the traffic area. I'm trying to pick up envelopes. This was earlier today. And I get to the door to walk out, and there's some children, unaccompanied, apparently. And they're pretty much around the halls, and they were attempting to come through the door. So, you know, I had stopped them. And then I look back at the racist, okay? And she just had a hand on her head, like she was frustrated or whatever. And she said, this is ridiculous. And then, and I was about to ask her something about, you know, has it been like this all day? And she was like, you better get your, and she cut herself off. She was about to say something. And I gave her a very serious look. I had asked her something about your children. And, you know, I made sure that I remained calm. And she says, it's just ridiculous. She said it again. It's ridiculous that these parents come around here and they're not being mindful of their children, and they let them run around like wild animals. So I said, okay. And I just walked out and I went on to do my work. But I'm saying is what these particular girls, like these particular people really, they are white men and women, but mostly white women. They are synchronized with their emotions. Sometimes they're being, as people have said before, they'll be nicer and they'll be angry or whatever. But you could tell the phone texting and chatting still going on, trying to see what my next move would be. And that's all I have to share. Thanks for allowing me to speak.
Much obliged. Caller in Florida, I was able to hear your commentary. It's just a little befuddled. I was thinking I was going to be able to get my switchboard resurrected and all that, and not the case at all. The entire Wi-Fi signal is gone, and I even have Wi-Fi that is separate on my phone. That's not working either. System of racism, white supremacy. No Wi-Fi at all. We'll try to make do. Actually, we'll just wrap up. I don't even know how I'll be able to end the program. Which one at all? But at any rate, I'm not surprised with the tackiness in a variety of different layers. I think there's lots of scholarship on saying that black people smell bad and then finding different cute ways of making jokes about it and things. I know James Baldwin and many others have written about it. The section about them saying, or someone encouraging you to just knock her out or hit her, where the black misandry is so rampant in the system of white supremacy, and particularly in workplace environments, that sort of thing, like, man, any excuse for a black person where he's being encouraged to be violent, strike someone, like, yeah. And I think you'd say people with those type of metaphors where they're often using those type of violent criminal metaphors to talk about black people in the workplace, even especially down at the courthouse area. Like I said, I'm totally befuddled. I have no switchboard at all, and I'm not even sure. I don't recall a time before where this has happened, at least not in recent memory, where I do not have a switchboard at all. We will have to see how it happens for the end. If anyone called in and you put a hand up late, there's nothing I can do because I do not have Wi-Fi at all. Again, the Wi-Fi in the residence has disappeared, and the Wi-Fi on my phone, which is totally separate, has also disappeared. I would like to say that I am a cheapskate, but I ding dang. My phone is on, so there's some evidence to suggest that he at least paid his phone bill. Wi-Fi has gone there, too. Anyway, so if you dialed in and don't have a hand up, or you put your hand up late, there's nothing I can do about that. Are there any folks who dialed in with a hand up that we missed totally? Seems like there were some other people who had a hand up, but oh well. We'll have to try for next week. I am quite missed. As I said, I've been really pleased. Like, I got nice, great, super fast Wi-Fi back when I got my computer replaced and everything, and it had been fantastic, except we did have power outages at the beginning of the year, so I mean, that notwithstanding, but it had been great, super fast until last 2 days. It has been absolutely terrible, and now it is gone. Hopefully it'll be back soon and won't cause any disruptions for the broadcast tomorrow. But, yeah, we will try to be here without tech issues for the compensatory call in 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific for Saturday. Any other comments folks need to get in before we get ready to wrap? Again, my apologies to anybody who dialed in with a hand up late. Tech issues got us today. What can you do? Any of the folks who already had a hand up, I already have their line open. Any remarks they need to get in before we wrap?
May I say something real quick, Gus?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. With the little black boy, I bought him last month. I bought him a cup, his own personal cup. He loves his cup, so I bought it to encourage them to give him drinks in his cup, versus allowing him to drink out of random cups. I don't know what's in the cup. There's no wine cooler bottles, but they do. You can tell they consume a lot of alcohol, and he'll play with some of the alcohol bottles that aren't open.
And I try to discourage him from doing that because they're the bar display is close to the pantry. I don't want to put anything like that in notes because I've never seen him drink, consume any alcohol, but I know he has easy access because it's everything's available. So I'm not going to write that. I know I'm a mandated reporter, but I'm not going to write that in any notes because the supervisor over the case, the actual supervisor, is not Black, and I don't want to do anything to get them to take the child out of the home. I just do little things to kind of redirect. So I noticed today that there were no cups. It was one cup on the island that was empty, and she reached for his cup and filled his cup up with juice, and he drank out of his cup. As far as our rapport, she's maybe 12 years under me with a 16-year-old on the spectrum who has seizures every day. So I give her the benefit of the doubt. I am able to communicate with her if I take the stance, and I took on an extra day to try to help with the child. So I'll do what I can to help her before I report her. I don't want to report her because I don't want them to remove the children from the home. So I just kind of redirect her or things like that. And then as far as the diet, I'll let the Black supervisor come in because she noticed the diet as well and say something about the diet versus me. So that's all, and I'll mute my line.
Much obliged, Bay Area mom. Sobriety would be best. With that, failed by technical difficulties. I don't know. There might be like Wi-Fi. I would like to go check because it needs to be like widespread Wi-Fi outage. Like I can't really verify because I can't check anything, but it seems like there could be a greater disturbance with the signaling. Anywho, I hope it will be resolved by tomorrow. Much obliged for folks tuning in. Hope it was worthy of your Friday evening. We will try for the compensatory call-in 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Lots to discuss worldwide. The problem remains. Individuals classified as white. With that, sobriety would be best, say that again, under the system of white supremacy, especially if it means access for your young children to get wine coolers and such. Like, yes, sobriety would be very much better. In addition to being sober, let's be buckled if we're going to go out. I would recommend hunkering down. It's kind of dangerous out and about right now. If you're going to go out, be very alert to what's happening around you. If it looks like folks are getting hostile and rowdy, exit. You don't know if they're armed. You don't know if they have a whole cadre of armed individuals who are ready to harm. If you didn't leave prepared to do Mortal Kombat, exit. So sober, buckled. If you're driving, you are not on the cell phone. All of our attention, in addition to being alert to what's happening around us, we are not on the cell phone. We are trying to minimize as best we can contact with the Mark Furmans of the known universe. We are also trying as best we can, woo, man, oh man, to remain alert of our surroundings in very dangerous times. Underline, very dangerous times. With that, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other Black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of Black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with
another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
Shut I'm a up. Victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.